Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Another edition of Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Anyways, I hope everybody's doing well. It's starting to look like winter. Things are starting to look ugly. Now we're past Halloween. Hope everybody had a good Halloween and ate plenty of candy and dressed up and took the kids out walking around the neighborhoods. But now it's time, man, to talk some boxing. Let's get down to some boxing. Let me get in my co-host. What's up, brother? Did you wear your costume?
You know, actually, I did wear a costume on Monday for Halloween, but I did my trick or treating yesterday on the conference call with Bob Arum.
I heard you got a pretty good treat by a big juicy chocolate hang up. You know.
Yeah. It's amazing. It really
those are always the best treats to get too, man. You know, is when you're still talking and then you wait for a minute and you're like, was I just hung up on? You know, I don't know. I actually knew.
I heard him say, you know, get this guy out of here.
Gabriel Montoya, I had enough of you.
I think they cut me off before if anybody was recording it. But the last thing I said was, Bob, I don't tell you how to be a promoter. Don't tell me how to be a journalist. And then they were like, our next question.
And
they moved on. But they
disgruntled.
Yeah, but some guy who's going to follow Bob's script. I don't know who the writer was, so I shouldn't say
right.
that. But I actually hung up immediately. I was like, you know what, I'm not going to waste my time if that's how it's going to be. But what's interesting was I don't know if you got the email. They sent out the conference call transcript. There is no hint of anything that I said in there. You would never know that I was on that call. They cut it all out.
No, you know what? I didn't get anything. You know why? Because Top Rank, for some reason, don't like to send us stuff. I think we ticked them off a couple years ago, and we were actually blacklisted from them, if I'm correct. So.
Well, hanging out with me should really help your profile.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we're making enemies all over the place. And really, honestly, it's just funny that making enemies with publicists and promoters just because we're covering the sport that we're supposed to be covering. We're doing things what we're supposed to be doing, asking the real questions, the questions that the listeners and fans like myself, we want to know. And we're now being restricted from trying to say or get our point across because they all want to sugarcoat it or just put things, you know, put things on the side, man. I just think that's ridiculous. But, hey, it is what it is. What can we do? All we can continue doing is try to cover the sport that we truly, truly love, and that's boxing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it is – I mean, it's his toy. He can take it and go home with it if he wants to. That's Bob's choice.
Right.
But I don't think that anything that I asked was in line. In fact, I had yet to ask my hard questions. You know, I wanted to talk about the perception that the fight is a mismatch, the 9-1 odds. You know, here we are yet again with a fight that seemingly everybody knows the outcome to, and yet we're watching it on pay-per-view. We got that in the Donaire Narvaez fight. We got that with Floyd Ortiz, although there was some mystery there because Ortiz was a little bit of an unknown in a big fight. He did have power. He was the bigger man and the younger man. But it was still a fight that we all felt we knew exactly who was going to win. I think fight fans are absolutely fed up and tired of it. And somebody emailed me last night, fight fans are tired of being lied to. And I think it's unfair when you try to ask a legitimate question. And you know, I have to be fair to Alex Ariza, and we'll have him later on in the show. I was wrong in that I mentioned that Alex was pointing the finger at their camp. He wasn't. And the reason I kind of got that perception, because I'd read Alex's interview. I was prepped well before I asked questions. And Alex had just pointed out that he understood that Marquez had a good team and he was working with Usain Bolt, not Usain Bolt himself, but the guy that worked with Usain Bolt. And there have been some whispers about Mr. Bolt and how it is that he kind of came out of nowhere and all of a sudden is the fastest man on the planet.
Right.
You know, certainly the sport of track and field is one that is rife with PEDs and that kind of, you know, those kind of conspiracies. And here they are working with a guy who changed his name for TV, Angel Hernandez, who's actually Angel Heredia, who's a guy that testified against like 20 or 30 people.
Right. Yeah,
and,
I saw that.
You know, and so I think it was legitimate for me to. The reason I mentioned Ariza and the question that got me kicked off was to Marquez, do you find it ironic that Alex Ariza, who's part of a team that balked at doing drug testing, is now pointing the finger at you? And the reason I mentioned it, not only is all the myriad of excuses that they used in, you know, putting stipulations on cutoff dates and we don't want to do it. And even Freddie said on our show a couple weeks back, you know, who's Mayweather? He never really answered the question, is the testing, are you guys going to do it? He kind of dodged the question by putting the blame on Floyd of saying he's always going to change something. But in the translation, when I asked the question, the first question was, because Marquez had mentioned possible lawsuit and Hernandez maybe doing a lawsuit. And my first question was, am I to understand that because of Conte's comments, you're going to be filing a lawsuit? When they translated it, they added Alex Ariza's name. And all through the conference call before I got there, they kept grouping Conte's comments with Alex Ariza's comments. Now,
right.
I find it funny that Bob was so quick to jump on me for mentioning that you guys have made five or six excuses about why you would test or wouldn't test or how you would test, and yet he didn't feel the need to correct Marquez or the translator regarding Alex Ariza's statements and how incorrect their perception of him was. So it's kind of one of those, you know, I want to be truthful over here. I don't want to be truthful over there. I'm uninformed over here. And Bob's comments about PEDs were some of the most uninformed, nonsensical ramblings I've ever heard about steroid use in America, in American sports, and certainly in boxing.
What do you know about steroid use, Gabe?
to quote what Bob Arum said about Freddie Roach when he said he'd fight Martinez with Pacquiao at 150. Bob, you were talking out of your ass. Sorry, but you clearly need to be educated on PEDs. His statement, and you know,
and
I can.
And it's so it's so funny that when somebody does do something like that, they're not aware that they are. We got a great show tonight, man, to even clarify some of the questions that were being brought out on that conference call with Marquez and Alex Ariza. And Alex Ariza is going to be coming on. But then a little earlier before him, our first guest is going to be Victor Conte. After that, we got some other guests that we should be calling in. I think we're going to have a really stack-packed show. And then we got some fights, man, to talk about happening this Saturday. It was really quiet this past Saturday, and the fight that we thought that was going to be explosive was the rematch between Tyson Marquez and Concepcion. First round blowout, what could you say? You know, I mean, not a whole lot to dissect from that first round. It was really fast, at a high pace. Marquez jumped all over him and got the job done. I see we got a lot of calls, man, so I think we got Victor scheduled in to call in at 5:15, or Gabe was going to be patching him in. So
he's waiting right now. You know, he said whenever you text me, I will call in. So you want to take one caller and then
I want
to
take one call
right
in. Let's take one call in, and everybody else, just be patient. Like I said, we got a stacked show, a lot of stuff to talk about. So everybody, just stay on the line, don't hang up, and we'll get you in as soon as we can. But let's get the first caller, Gato. Making his comeback. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving in the ring.
What's going on, baby? How's everything?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, just doing good. Watching X Factor right now.
You know what, man? I haven't got into that, brother. I got to tell you the truth. I heard it's good. But let's talk about your comeback. Where you been and why making a comeback now?
Well, you know, I've been out the game 2 years, man. You know, I left boxing because, and I left, but I had to make money. Boxing wasn't paying me. Here I am, number four in the world. And here I am, everybody knows me, you know. And I'm like, yo, what's going on? Coming home with $4,000, the Randall Bailey fight. It was hard. It was hard being a man.
Right. No, it is. It's a tough business, and I completely understand where you're coming from. You know, when you got to put food on the table and the job that you truly love is not giving that providement for your family, you know, it's really hard to walk around with your head up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, my wife is yelling, screaming, and, you know, I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was pretty much where, like, I had to do something. I had to do something. So while I'm waiting for boxing to call me, I started a personal training business, and I'm also coming out with a motivational phone line called Can't Stop, Won't Stop. And mm-hmm. I've just been on the go. I've been working out. You know what I mean? I just ran 12 miles. You know, I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really great. You know, this time, I thought, being younger, I would give my all to boxing. When I started speaking, I wasn't.
Right.
I've never done what I'm doing now like I did before. So when I come back to this world, 140 pounds, you have to beware because I'm coming hard and I'm coming fast. I'm not playing with these cats. You've been playing with the wrong doctor.
Absolutely, man. So have you talked to any promoters? Are there a date? I mean, what's going on? I mean,
now. You know, I'm setting my foundation up. I'm trying to get my team together. You know what I mean? So first things first is getting your team together. Who you like? Who you trust? You know, we hired a sports entertainment lawyer, and I have my coach. We went back to all my coaches that I've had in my past, who I feel is going to take me to the next level in my boxing style.
Right.
And I left him because of money. I wanted to be free of not working. And because of that sacrifice, when I moved down to a promoter, I left him behind. And not knowing, I made the wrong decision for the wrong concept.
Right.
So now that I'm older and wiser and smarter, and I'll knock you the fuck out, it's going to be a different game now. Because my mind is free. My mind has no problem. And it's free.
Well, man, you know, we wish you the best of luck. I know you were going through some hard times, you know, getting fired from the Kodo camp and you know, going through your up and downs. But now you're back, and it sounds like you're motivated, determined, and sounds like things are on the right track for you in your life in that perspective. Can't wait to see you get back in the ring, brother.
Yeah, man. I'm doing a lot, man. I'm even looking up for my people, like, in the sense that, you know, it's time for me to give back. I mean, I have a little name. I don't have a big name, but I have a little name, and I know I motivate people. So we had a boxer, a bunch boxer here, who had who was in a multi-car accident.
Wow.
His sister died, and he's in the hospital, right? So I was watching this on a local news. I was like, yo, I gotta visit this kid. He may not know who I am, but yo, I'm giving back.
Right.
He knows who I am even better.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's how I feel. It's a can't stop, won't stop thing. It's not a saying. It's a movement. I want to help move people.
Man, I hear you, brother.
When do you expect to be back in the ring?
Yeah, I'm looking in February. We're gonna start calling different promoters right now because I'm free. I'm a free agent from a manager and promoter, which is dangerous. And now that I'm free, my wife is my manager. And we have a sports entertainment lawyer, so we're looking to see if we talk to the Bella. I know Golden Boy is coming here in town, so I can talk to Golden Boy and see what they offer, see what the Bella offers. And I'll go with the best one that's going to satisfy my career.
What do you expect the promoters, how do you expect them to take you, though? I mean, do you expect them to take you serious as a guy that wants to become a champion and a real contender, or a guy that walked away 2 years ago and making a comeback and is now more or less is a name to probably use as a stepping stone? How are you walking into this, back into the game?
Oh, when I go back in, I'm going to, first of all, when I walk into that office, they're going to see how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to perform in front of them and let them know who the hell they're going to sign. And when they see what I got, we're going to sit down, we're going to talk.
Absolutely. All right, brother, well. Hey, you know, I wish you all the luck. Keep us updated. Let us know. Gato right here is telling us he's making his comeback. Love to see you get back in there, man, because I have always been a fan.
Thanks a lot, baby. I appreciate that. I want to give just two plugs out. I want to give my Twitter account out there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's No One Stops Gato. And my YouTube is youtube.com/ No One Stops Gato.
There you go. No One Stops Gato.
No
all
One
right,
Stops
brother.
Gato, baby.
You take care, man.
All right, baby. Take it easy.
All right. So there you go. Francisco Gato making his comeback. Been off for about 2 years. So became a personal trainer. Got to get things right. Get things situated because he had the wife on his back telling him, mijo, you got to go make some money. And that's exactly what he had to do. But, you know, when you get that fired, he's still a young guy. Still a young guy. But 2 years is a long layoff. 2 years is a long layoff to step away from that ring. Well, my co-host Gabriel Montoya patches in Victor Conte. I'll keep it rolling. But
actually, right
there.
Here, I just I just texted him, so
okay.
He'll be calling me in a second. He's heading over to his landline, I think. So he's using the secret Conte phone.
Oh.
In the Conte
cave? In the Conte cave?
Yes.
In the lab.
From a bank of computers staring at all the fighters he works on.
Yeah, man. You know, going back.
I find it funny, you know, just how much this is the kind of ripple effect of all this. And the thing that drove me, reading over the conference call transcript, it's interesting how people don't answer questions. And somebody asked them, how did you come to meet and be introduced to Hernandez? And they kind of skirted around it. They didn't really answer it. But also, they claimed that they didn't know his history. And the guy, it's not like he's from Connecticut. He's from Mexico.
Right.
You know, I just find it very odd that this guy who's worked with people all over the world, and, you know, Nacho certainly worked all over the world, how did they not know this? And there was a certain kind of indignation of, how dare you ask us this? But, it's, you know, certainly people are questioning people that work with Victor Conte. I mean,
right.
I don't even think Andre Ward's working with Victor Conte anymore, and yet people were, you know, I get emails from guys, he's got to be juicing, he's working with Victor Conte, and how can we put this guy in the sport? And, you know, I always remind people, Victor didn't kill anybody. If you have a problem with former felons or, you know, people that were convicted of a crime that have done their time in the sport, talk to Don King and Bernard Hopkins. All right, here we go. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead, yeah. And I think that's absolutely true, man. I mean, you know, sometimes people like to use that as more of a leverage because the fighter that is under the tutelage of somebody that's been convicted of something, it's easier to point the finger rather than accept the fact that the guy won, you know, Andre Ward. And we get a lot of that, you know. Like, he's got to be doing this. He's got to be doing that. And I always say, look at the fight. Look at the fight and look what he's doing. Andre Ward is applying the skills that him and himself and Virgil Hunter have been working on for numerous years. Anyways, we're back with my co-host Gabriel Montoya and our guest Victor Conte. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Good to be here, guys.
Hey, you know, before we start this interview, I got to ask you something because you were in one of my favorite groups, Tower of Power. Which one of the songs were you part of?
I played on the We Came to Play album that the front cover is the Oakland Coliseum, and we took the group shot in the Oakland Raiders locker room.
Okay.
I think people should just, you know, forgive the past just for the fact that you're part of such a funky band. well, Victor, obviously you know why you came on. There's been a lot of talk recently about you, your work with fighters, and also kind of people pointing fingers back and forth regarding one Alex Ariza's comments about yourself, and also the revelation that Angel Hernandez, who was on 24/7, is working with Juan Manuel Marquez to get him ready for Manny Pacquiao, is in fact Angel Heredia, a man with a very checkered past. Could you, I guess, first start off by explaining just exactly who he is and why it's significant that Marquez is working with him?
Well, Angel, his nickname is Memo Heredia, was a star witness in the Balco case, specifically the case against Trevor Graham. And Trevor started working with Memo in December of 1996. And then Marion Jones and Andrew Pettigrew and Jerome Young and many other athletes that trained with Trevor were with Memo until the year 2000. And at that time, I met Tim and Trevor and that group, and those athletes switched over and started working with me. Then this all came out during Trevor's trial, and they recruited him, and he provided not only testimony but lab reports and various types of Western Union receipts and different things on a whole long list of athletes. And, of course, there were very serious consequences for all of them. So instead of accepting responsibility for his role in what he was doing, and he was really at the top of the food chain, he was probably one of the two biggest suppliers in the entire Balco case. he chose to cooperate and walk free. And, you know, I've had strong suspicions about what he's been doing since then. The trial was in 2008, and, of course, he's went public and said that he's working with lots of athletes, track athletes from Jamaica. And I know somebody that saw him at the World Championships in Berlin, Germany, in 2008. And so I knew that he was back actively working with track and field athletes. And then it was really of interest when I saw him training Marquez on 24/7, and of course I recognized that it was a memo. And then when I saw the name that came on the screen as Angel Hernandez, well, it struck me as very odd that he would change his name. And I guess if they tried to do any due diligence on him and searched his name, of course all this stuff would have came out. So I'm assuming that that's the reason he changed his name. But I think the more interesting part of this whole development is the connection to Usain Bolt. Because I've been saying since before the Olympic Games in Beijing in 2008 that I was highly suspicious of the athletes down there. And, of course, everyone knows how they did. I mean, the women got gold, silver, bronze in 100 meters, a small country taking all three medals. And Veronica Campbell, who was a world champion, didn't even make the team. She came in fourth in 100 meters. And I said, whoa, and the times were extremely fast. And you had the girl that won the gold that had run 11:35 in 2007, and all of a sudden she runs 10:78, 5 meters faster. So I became very, very suspicious. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that I could go on and on about. But, I've obviously known about him ever since the day that before they raided Balco and his extensive participation in that criminal case.
Now, Aretha has made a lot of comments regarding yourself in the last few days. He's called you a salesman. He says he called you a mental midget. Says you don't really understand what it is to get these guys in shape, and you're just kind of living off of your Balco days, which, considering the past there, I don't understand why you would want to live off your Balco days. What are your thoughts regarding that, and why do you think that he would make those kind of comments about you?
I don't know. It seems to me that he's very threatened by me in some way. Now, you know, you're right. The name calling, he's an idiot, he's a moron, he's a sorry ass, all that, doesn't have the mental capacity to understand his greatness. You know, he somehow views this as a competition. I don't see it that way at all. And originally there was an interview that I did where somebody asked me about that. And I said, listen, I'm a part of a team, a Nonito's team, and this team has worked with some other boxers. But Mike Basil is a great strength and conditioning coach for Nonito. Remy Korchemny is a legendary track coach that's worked with many, many world champions and Olympic medalists and world record holders. He's 79 years old. He got his PhD in 1962. I mean, this guy is really a tremendous trainer. And, also Cameron Fort, the ART guy. So I'm a part of a team where the four of us basically provide the same types of services, I guess you would say, as Alex. So he views it as a competition, where I don't see it that way at all. And I believe that, our team, and this is basically what I said, is more scientific in our approach. And I believe that we're providing superior training methods to what Alex is. Now, he's said all these things about me and got his opinion, and in response, all I can say is, in short, it's my opinion, that's all it is, but I believe, based upon the way that Alex Ariza behaves, that he's a drug man and he's being foolish.
Wow. What do you mean he's a drug man, Victor? What would make you believe something like that?
I've worked with a lot of athletes in the past, and anytime you see these rapid improvements in performance, like I just talked about with the sprinters and Usain Bolt, and recently we see, his training partner basically said, well, Usain Bolt, he's so gifted, he's 6'5", all these genetic gifts that he has. And then his training partner runs 19:26 in the 200 meters, where he'd run 20:60, and then the year before 19:78, and then he runs 5 meters faster to run 19:26. Well, he's only 5'9". I mean, he's not you know, so there's more to it than the gift. And I believe, you know, I've got huge respect for Freddie Roach. And Manny Pacquiao is a tremendous athlete, very gifted and talented. But, you know, when Ariza starts calling me all these names and this stuff, here's my direct question for him. If I'm a moron and I'm an idiot and I don't have the mental capacity to understand how great he is, then why has his boss, Freddie Roach, been routinely reaching out to me and asking to talk and have me help him with some of my protocols and my techniques?
That
if he's so happy and Ariza is the know-it-all that he claims to be, then why has Freddie been reaching out to me?
Why do you think
we need to ask him that question?
That's an excellent question. We will ask him that tonight. Now, when did they begin reaching out to you?
Back in the earlier part of the year, several months ago, I was first contacted, you know, without naming names and dragging a bunch of other people into it, but a credible person within this close to Freddie who contacted me by phone or by email, and then I met with him in person, and he asked me if I would be willing and what Freddie wanted, and Freddie eventually, I never did talk to him, but he did call and leave a voicemail and tell me what he wanted to talk to me about, my methods and training techniques and so on. And I just felt, you know, that talked to people within my camp that it wasn't something that I really wanted to do. Freddie came up and introduced himself to me after the Zab Judah fight. Of course, Nonito knows him very well. I respect Freddie. I just think that in short, the support team really can only make a difference in a fight if the fighter and the head trainer get it right. And I've learned that no matter how well I do my job or anybody else in the support team does their job, that if the fighter gets it wrong or the head trainer gets it wrong, it's more than likely that the fighter is going to lose the fight. I think that publicly and that Alex Ariza is attempting to take credit for the success of Manny Pacquiao. I think my opinion is at best he's a bit above average as a trainer. I don't think he's anything special. I think Manny Pacquiao is special, and I think Freddie's doing a great job. But that's my opinion. And because these guys are, you know, specifically Manny has went up in weight and really performed, this is something that's an anomaly, as everybody knows, and that he's not the only one that I suspect. But that's really the reason. And of course, there's all sorts of other rumors and innuendo out there, and people that, you know, have talked and claim to know where dead bodies are and things like this. You know, I you have to take it with a grain of salt, and you certainly can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, as if there was some sort of criminal activity going on. But that's just my gut experience from working with athletes that have used drugs and not. And my opinion is that Alex Ariza is I'm highly suspicious that he is a drug man.
Do you think it's a case of where there's smoke, there's fire? I mean, we had there was that anonymous report that came out months ago about a sparring partner, you know, a Filipino sparring partner shooting up Pacquiao, and their reticence initially to even test without some sort of cutoff date and stipulation. But while all these rumors, it seems like there's a lot of smoke, and you don't really get that without a lot of strength and conditioning coaches or teams.
Well, that's why I said behaves, the way he's behaving. That to me, you know, that he's being foolish, because him saying Conte needs to stay on his own side of the fence and, you know, boxing is doing just fine and I don't think we need any you know, testing beyond what the commissions do, and why should we do any testing that Floyd Mayweather wants us to do? You know, Manny's the man and, you know, my program's the best and I beat Conte and now I'm going to beat this dude. And somehow this, I don't know where this is coming from, but it just seems that in his own mind, he's taking far too much credit for the success of these fighters. And I have learned a long time ago that you know, the truly talented fighters, they're the leaders, they're the ones that make good decisions, they know their body. You know, in Nonito's camp, I can tell you straight up, he's got an excellent support team, but he's the decision maker, he's the boss.
Right. And you really look at, I believe Ariza started with Pacquiao right after Justin Fortune left with the Jorge Solis fight. And I think it was somewhere in that period, around 2008, March. Now, Pacquiao jumps from 130 in 2008, March, against Marquez, to 135 3 months later against David Diaz. And then by that December, he's fighting at welterweight at 142. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what he weighed the night of the fight against Oscar De La Hoya. That's a significant weight jump. Do you know any sort of natural techniques that would allow a guy that had fought at 106 pounds years before to make that kind of weight jump in his 30s? To me, that's a bit of a red flag. I'm not, you know, going to say flat out anything, but do you, as an expert in this field, do you consider that a red flag?
Once again, I like to use the phrase highly suspicious. I mean, could it be done if you're smart in terms of nutrition and training? Sure, it could be done. But the funny part about all this is that he says, you know, my guys are blowing guys out of the water. Well, if you go back and look, the last four of Manny's fights have went 12 rounds. He's, I would say, since Ariza's went to him, I'm not certain about this and haven't done the math, but just looking at Manny's record, it seems like his KO percentage was higher than since he's been with Ariza. You look at the last fights and you know, I mean, maybe he's going easy on these guys, like they say, but and not to put Manny down because I've got huge respect for him. I just, you know, what amazes me is how Ariza can present these ideas that he's responsible for Manny's success, and it's things that they say that when I talk about the way they behave, and there's been things Freddie have said, like, well, if we were on steroids, then we wouldn't be able to pass the test. Well, he has to read the newspaper. I mean, he has to know that Marion Jones passed 160 tests and Lance Armstrong has passed 500 tests. And does that mean they're clean? I'm not so sure it does. So these are the things I just don't understand where all this hostility comes from and why he's projecting this. And, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, Memo, you know, I'm suspicious of him. But, you know, to immediately go to, he's a fat Mexican with slippers. You know, the name calling.
Right.
I don't understand this. It's foolish, and it makes not only Ariza look bad, but I think it makes his entire camp and everybody around him look bad. So it's one thing, you know, they say that I'm pointing fingers. Well, in this particular case with Heredia, I may be pointing fingers, but I'm pointing at court records and documents and his own statements.
Right. Yeah, all the things that you tweeted out were his own statements. There were interviews with him practically boasting. I'm curious. I'm sure you get contacted by a lot of guys. A lot of fighters are now moving in your direction and want to work with you. Is there a percentage? I know you want to throw anybody under the bus here or name names, but is there at least a segment of that group, not the guys you're working with, obviously, but guys that inquire, that maybe are wondering or thinking, is this guy still dirty and still knows how to hide it, and can I get that edge too? Do you get that sense?
Sure. I it's difficult for me, and that's why I have to be very careful, you know, because I've been trying to rehabilitate myself and my life and be able to take care of my family, and I certainly can't afford to make, you know, mistakes like I've made in the past. So, you know, I think you're saying some may be thinking that maybe, you know, I've got some sort of new designer drug or something, and that may be their real motive, and they're looking for that opportunity to ask me that question. I think it's possible. But, you know, for the most part, the athletes that I'm working with and have worked with in the past, the Nonito Daenerys and Andre Ward's and Andre Berto, you know, these guys are clean. And I truly believe that based on, you know, I'm not drug testing them, but we do comprehensive blood testing. And you can look at liver enzymes and cholesterol fractions and all sorts of other indicators of the use of performance-enhancing drugs. And if I see anything like that, then obviously I'm going to remove myself. So it appears to me that these guys are clean. And that's great news for boxing because, you know, it tells me that you can become a world champion and achieve great things and be clean and do it the right way. So I'm careful. You're right. Without naming names, there have been some quite a few fighters that have come to me and attempted to get me to work with them. In short, Marquez Camp is one of them. They contacted me early on and wanted me to go to Mexico and wanted me to come to L.A., and they were even willing to come up here and meet in the Bay Area, and I just had too much going on with Nonito and Berto in camp at the same time, and I just told them I was too busy and couldn't do it. the next thing you know, I see this 24/7 piece, and here's Memo, you know, down in Mexico helping Marquez. And nothing against Marquez. I've never said anything against him. He seems like a gentleman, a good guy. So his trainer does too. So there's nothing I'm saying about them. What I was pointing out was, here's a guy that has this history, and he's changed his name, and he's in the game, and Alex Ariza had gathered information that this guy was, you know, a part of Usain Bolt's camp. And knowing
right.
everything I know about the Jamaicans, 2 and 2 equaled a very loud 4, and that's what I tweeted.
Let me ask you this, and 'cause obviously fans, they have their perception, and one of them is, here's a guy that comes, they had a black hat, and now he's wearing a white hat because he's made a change. Supposedly, that's how they look at things. Supposedly, he's made a change. And their look at what's going on is, why so frantic into exposing what these guys are doing? And is this really a behind the thing of three guys or pops possibly competing on some type of enhancement so they have to outnumber each other?
I don't feel that I'm competing with Alex Ariza or Memo Heredia. I've never felt like that. I'm doing what I can to rehabilitate myself. You know, what a lot of people may not understand is that I started, you know, working with elite athletes and founded Balco in 1984. And in 1985, I was already working with Matt Biondi, the world's fastest swimmer, the 150 and 100-meter world record holder who'd won multiple gold medals in 1988 at the Olympics. Alberto Salazar was a New York City marathon and world record holder, champion. I'd worked with the entire Denver Broncos team that won back-to-back Super Bowls in 97 and 98, the entire Seattle Supersonics team in 92 and 93 that went on to, they lost to Michael Jordan and the Bulls in 7 games. But I had an extensive history of working with world-class athletes before I decided to make that trip down the slippery slope, which was a very serious mistake that I made.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just back to doing what I was doing before. And I think people think that maybe all along that previous to the infamous Balco Ray that I was on the dark side, and that's just simply not the case. And since then, I've obviously worked with athletes. Dwayne Chambers is the 2010 gold medalist at 60 meters, world champion that ran the third fastest time in history. These guys are clean. And so, I've been on both sides, and in some ways, I think it's I'm trying to take that information and knowledge that I gained, and the lessons were very difficult, but I'm trying to create positive change in boxing. And I'll continue to do what I do, and I know that everybody has the right to question my motives, I've no question about it. I've made very serious mistakes. I'm grateful for the forgiveness that I've received from the boxers that have decided to give me a second chance, and so I'm really glad to be a part of boxing, and I want to make a contribution, but I expect to be questioned, and I expect people to be curious and cautious and suspicious of me, and all I can do is the best that I can do.
Let me, talking about the change here, why do you think that the commissioners of boxing have been so reluctant of trying to make a change when it comes to testing? You know, could it be that they don't want to end up looking like a couple of interns doing a testing and also figure out that there's ways of beating these particular tests that are being presented to fighters?
You know, there are very simple things that can be done that they don't do. You're asking about, is there a genuine interest by those who receive the majority of the financial gain from boxing in cleaning up the sport? I'm not so sure there is. And that it's just, after Balco, I met with USADA 3 times, and I gave them lots of information and told them that they had lab reports, they had calendars, and explained to them that these Olympic athletes, it's the fourth quarter of the year, October, November, December, before they compete the next competitive season, and that's when they use steroids in conjunction with intensive weight training and develop the strength base that serves them months later. So that's when they need to be doing the testing. Well, 2007, before the Olympic Games, after I met with them, the first three quarters they did about 1,200 tests a quarter, and the fourth quarter they reduced it by 50%. Now, I know they're not uninformed because I met with them face-to-face and informed them. Why did they choose to reduce the amount of testing? I don't have a good answer for that. And let me talk about boxing and something positive here. And there's been a lot about the expense, and it costs $50,000 to $100,000. I believe that a lot of athletes at the elite level in boxing are either using EPO or blood doping. Either way, it gives a significant, it's probably the most powerful of all performance-enhancing drugs, even more so than anabolic steroids. One of the things that you could do, they do testing before and after fights, but they don't do blood testing. And these tests are, you could do a complete blood count for, in the old Balco days, we used to pay $4.50 for it. All you have to do is measure the hematocrit. And in cycling, they have this rule. In Nordic skiing, they have this rule where regardless of how you get a 50% or greater count of red blood cells, your blood is too thick, and they suspend you for what they call health concerns. So right. Whether you're extracting your blood and you're re-injecting it right before the fight, or you're using EPO coming out and you've got your hematocrits elevated, right there is a flag. I mean, the two standard deviation range, the top end, is 50. So this is why a lot of the cyclists, you know, experts in the anti-doping world have said, well, it's interesting how they all come in at 49.5. But what I'm trying to say is that simple change would be very expensive, but it would be very effective at reducing the use of either blood doping or EPO in boxing.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it the same expense of them doing blood doping, you know, testing the blood or a sample of hair? Which would be cheaper for some type of test after a fight?
Well, it depends upon what you're talking about. What type of drug? You can't. Some would be better in hair. Some would be better in blood. Hair is the more chronic. It's like an excretory sample, like long-term use, as opposed to blood's obviously a more here and now dynamic. So I think as many biological fluid and tissue compartment samples as you can get, the better. And they all give different types of information, but they would certainly help in detecting these drugs. So do I think that there is some science and that at some point it may be a good idea to introduce hair testing? I do.
And just for the follow-up about you noticed they didn't have any interest of wanting to change it. What gave you that sense? I mean, could it be because breaking records and doing such things like that in a sport, it really, honestly, it probably takes away sponsorships and investment, and they could lose more money by making their athletes looking a little too normal?
Well, of course, and the reason that I question whether there's a genuine interest is I was asked by Dwayne Chambers to write a letter to UK Anti-Doping and spell out in great detail what the drugs were that he was using, what the purpose was, what the dosage and frequencies were, and I did this. And then eventually this from BBC Sport got submitted to WADA, and I went to New York, and I met with Dick Pound. This was on December 12th of 2007, and we had a 3.5-hour meeting, and they transcribed everything that was said at that meeting, and I provided all sorts of information to them. 2 weeks later, after they had the first decade, Dick Pound was the founder and chairman for the first decade. Well, he stepped down. The new guy, John Fahey from Australia, that came in, and there's on my website, there's an interview with both of them, and Dick Pound said, well, I find Conti to be credible, and the new guy said, well, I choose not to do business with a convicted felon. I'll listen to medical doctors. And then I started working on another project. There was another designer substance that was out there that I was working on with WADA and the lab in Montreal. And I told Dick, well, listen, I told you about this group, and back in December of 2007, please go back and look at the notes from that meeting, and you will see why it's so important that they follow up. And here I am with more evidence that what I was saying back then was true. Can you please go back and retrieve those notes? And the next day or day after, he got back to me and he said, well, I'm sorry to inform you, but they have told me that the notes from our meeting, quote, have been destroyed.
Wow.
Wow.
That is crazy.
Wow, that's coincidental. I want to read you something. I'd really like your opinion on it because I couldn't stop laughing as I was transcribing it. It's from Bob Arum yesterday on the conference call that he bumped me off of. He said, and I quote, "I'd like to say something. I want to say something to the writers. Many of you are really behind the times. Victor Conte and this Hernandez or Herrera or whatever were implicated in the use of steroids in the so-called Balco case. The two of them are the least likely to use steroids anymore because they have both learned their lesson. Secondly, people who understand conditioning and getting athletes getting ready, they know now that they don't use steroids, not because they're good guys, but because natural supplements used correctly have the same effect as steroids without the bad part, without the rage, without future complications in life. So the conditioners who know what they're doing wouldn't touch steroids because they aren't as effective as the natural supplements and the sophisticated training methods which are now used. So people are talking about things that existed 5 to 10 years ago that are not currently being used because there is better methods now, all of which happen to be legal. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do believe there are better methods now and trainers are smarter. But if he's suggesting that you can get better results, using natural substances compared to anabolic steroids and EPO and other very powerful drugs, that's not my opinion. Can you get maybe 25% of the benefits by being very smart? You can, without using drugs. But, are you going to get the same type of effects? I don't think you are. However, you have to put that in the context that, drugs don't necessarily make you a better athlete or make you run faster or throw punches faster and harder. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that when you're on steroids, or let's say testosterone, they work through cell volumization, and they make you tight. They make you pumped. You lose flexibility. You actually lose speed. When I first met Tim Montgomery, who eventually became the world's fastest human and broke the world record in the 100 meters, he had been getting drugs through his coach and I think likely were coming from Memo at that time. And he was a guy that ran under 10 seconds in the 100 meter, and he was running 10:20. They couldn't figure out why he was running slower, and he'd paid all this money. He was complaining he'd paid some $16,000 to Trevor for his coach, Trevor Graham, the same coach for Marion Jones, why he was running slower. And I said, well, get off the drugs. I said, just stop using them, and I'll predict that, 14 to 30 days from now, you'll run much faster. That's exactly what happened. The final meet of the season in Berlin, he ran 10:01, where he was running 10:19. So you have to understand how to taper off these drugs at the right time and when you get the peak performance. So it's not about loading up on drugs and being on drugs while you're performing. Right. There's a lot to it. And also, performance-enhancing drugs like steroids, they may strengthen and muscles and your power, but they'll also simultaneously weaken connective tissue, ligaments, and tendons. So they make you more prone to injury, and it causes an excretion of specific nutrients and minerals and elements like copper, and it weakens your connective tissue. So, Bill Walsh, the football coach, once said, I can always tell the guys that are on steroids because, they lack durability. They're out cramping, and they're hurt, and they're all these things. You see them, in the third and fourth quarter. So it's the point I'm trying to make is you have to know how to use the drugs to make these types of real superhuman-type performances that you get. So anybody that uses drugs, I think a lot of people use drugs, and they're either more prone to injury or they don't run as fast or compete at the same level that they did when they're off.
Well, and then also, the drugs are always changing. I mean, Bob's saying, using the blanket term steroids, but, things like EPO and testosterone, and even kind of the coming things like, genetic doping or, what MMA is experiencing, hormone replacement therapy, where guys are getting medical exemptions to use testosterone because they've blown themselves out using anabolics. All these things, some of them haven't even really touched boxing yet. We haven't quite seen hormone replacement therapy be asked for.
Well, it hasn't hit the newspapers yet, but as they discussed the conference for the Winter Olympics in 2010, they're microdosing. Instead of doing it once a week, they're doing small dosages under the radar there. And so you can use fast-acting testosterone and beat the test. There are specific, very expensive tests that they can use to differentiate between, you know, endogenous production and synthetic testosterone. But for the most part, they look at the TE ratio, and you got to be less than 4-1, and that's relatively easy to beat by microdosing with testosterone. So I think there aren't as these designer steroids like THG or the Clear and other things that Balco was using. I think that they're replacing that now, and they're microdosing, and we're using fast acting, which means gels or water based testosterone, and you know, and NEPO, or they're blood doping.
Right, and that's basically, you know, where I'm going. It seems like in any drug war, the drug people are always a little bit ahead of the testers. And I think the test you're referring to is the carbon isotope ratio testing, right?
Yes, that's correct.
USADA is not using at this point.
Well, it costs $550 compared to their cost for an entire panel of you know, more than 30 steroids, and the TE ratio is about, you know, I used to pay $80 in the old days, but I'm sure that they do a significant greater volume than I do, and they're probably paying in the neighborhood of $50. So it's a tenfold increase, but for $500, you can, and it'll stay in your system, you know, the synthetic part, 2 or 3 weeks, they could be busting a lot of people if they'd use that test. So I think it would be a good idea. You know, I just have different ideas about the most effective way to use the available funds that do exist, and I think there's a lot that can be done, and it wouldn't cost the type of money that Floyd Mayweather is spending to do the what they call Olympic-style testing, which I don't believe that's what it is, because that's 24/7, 365, and they just do random testing for a given period, whatever it is, 8 to 10 weeks out from a fight.
And they know exactly what the window is going to be. I mean, they don't know when they're going to be testing, but they know it begins here and it ends here, and we'll be testing throughout.
Let me give you an analogy. It's just like Major League Baseball. They know that they get tested twice a year. The first test is when they show up at training camp. Well, this isn't a drug test. This is an IQ test. And if you flunk that one, you're really dumb. And then they test them one time during the season, so they wait. They've been loaded up, and then they taper off, and then they wait until their name comes up, and for whatever reason, seems like a lot of the biggest stars get tested at the early part of the season. Then they know, unless they're being targeted for some reason, then they know that they won't be tested for the rest of the off season, and then they start using stuff. Or they just use it during the off season, where the Major League Baseball contract enables them to test up to 375 players, which is about 31% of the league. However, on the off season, they generally test around 50, which is less than 5%. So once again, is there that genuine interest in truly cleaning up drug use at the elite level of sport?
Well, that's what I've always kind of theorized, is that it's almost like the drug war. You know, you let certain things through, you don't catch the real things, the real big fish. You catch the little fish because you want to stay in business. You know, you want to catch certain things, but other things are going to be okay.
And I've got extensive background here with, you know, working with athletes that were doing stuff, and I can tell you there's a whole history of positive drug test cover-ups in the United States and other countries. So it's not like, you know, the USOC back in the 1988, they were screening the athletes. They came back, long story short, there was 100 positive tests. They covered up 50 of them. Of those 50, 19 of those athletes went on to win Olympic medals.
Wow.
So there's been a whole history of corruption, collusion, and positive drug test cover-ups.
When you saw Memo in that 24/7, and you looked at Marquez, Victor, what automatically did you see that was different about Marquez?
Well, you know, I've read things online that, you know, he put on 9 pounds of lean muscle in a relatively short period of time. And, you know, I just, like I said before, I've been suspicious of Memo all along. When people that I know saw him, there are things that will boggle your mind that specifically about him. I don't know if people realize, but it's taken down now. But there was a German documentary. This was in August of 2009 at the World Championships. This is just, and I don't know about the connection there, you know, I can't say between Memo and Usain Bolt, but it's when he ran 9:58 and broke the world record, and 19 in the 200 meters. a German film crew went to with him. You know, he lives near El Paso. They went into Mexico and they filmed him, and he went into a pharmacy and he bought several drugs, EPO, growth hormone, testosterone, you know, insulin type drugs, and then they followed him into a hotel room, and he laid them all out on a table, and you know, explained each one of them and how you use them and what the purpose is and how you can circumvent the anti-doping testing, and then to the best of my recollection, he got out a syringe and needle and drew some EPO and injected it into his stomach on camera. So, you know, and this was in 2009. This was right after he testified in 2008. So, you know, I don't know what to say. Well, why would he be doing that if he was not on the dark side?
Right.
Maybe he was trying to educate people. Maybe, you know, I mean, these are just suspicious activities to me. And it doesn't mean that I have any type of rock solid evidence or proof, you know, but I hear lots of rumors and innuendo. And at this point, that's all it is. But it just, you know, my purpose of tweeting what I did is to say, listen, here's a guy that has this history and he's getting ready to be a part of a mega fight. And, you know, my opinion, which is all it is that he may still be active on the dark side of sport. Maybe he's completely clean, though, at the same time. You know, I don't have any you know, strong evidence that he's not. So maybe he is clean. But, you know, I'm obviously suspicious.
Well, let's take away the strong evidence, because you're right. We don't have the strong evidence, but you do have an eye because of the fact you've been in that position and you've seen what the effect these particular drugs can do. What you're reading and what you've seen, is there a suspicion that Marquez can be using because of the fact that you have a guy by the name of Memo who's been documented and filmed in the past of doing this?
Once again, you know, it's difficult from my position because people can say the same thing about me. And am I clean now? And I have to do what I can to demonstrate that I'm clean. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I believe, you know, as much as anybody in second chances, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've had. So I believe anybody deserves a second chance. But I just, you know, feel that because he never had any pain anchored to the mistakes and the behavior, because he was they had a case against him for drug trafficking and money laundering, and he walked, and he did it by testifying and providing evidence against everybody else, so he didn't really receive significant consequences. Difference is, I went to prison. And, you know, I didn't testify and I didn't cooperate. And the reason I didn't is because I was, like he was, leading these athletes. So I'm going to turn around and then testify against them so I can walk as their lives, you know, are destroyed and their careers are erased. So I chose a different path.
That was
to accept full responsibility and do my time for the serious mistakes that I made.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because obviously people that are listening, they're going to be saying, oh, okay, well, that's the agenda then. This guy ratted on everybody else, and Victor's a little upset about that, and that's why he put it out there for the world to know. Is that the motivation?
Upset is not the right word. No, I don't think that's the right word. I'm not upset. I just think if, like I've been attempting to do for the last several years, which is to become a part of the collective anti-doping effort. That's how I see it. I'm just somebody that's trying to make a contribution. If you don't bring attention to these sorts of things, how can those that have the money and the power and the ability to make positive change, how can they look into this situation if they don't even know about it? Nobody even recognized him, except
right.
Until I did. I said, oh, my God, people need to, you know, this is not about judgment. So I'm not upset with Memo. I'm not upset with anybody. I just felt that it was important that people understand this guy's background. And the most interesting part of it, and I'll go back and reference this again, is when I saw that Alex Ariza said, and I've seen it in three different articles now, that he's from Usain Bolt's team. That he's working
right.
with Usain Bolt. And all of the suspicions that I have about these Jamaican track athletes that have had all these rapid improvements in performance, you know, at the very top Olympic gold medal level. So, you know, that it makes it more suspicious, and that's in part why I'm participating here in this interview, and I'm just speaking my mind and trying to be as truthful as I can.
And we appreciate that. We definitely appreciate
that. Yeah, absolutely. I just had one last thing, and, you know, obviously you've given us a lot of your time. It actually just kind of moving into fight territory. Nonito Donaire, to me, and I texted you this, that he looked to me a little flat against Narvaez. Maybe it was the layoff, but he also missed weight. He came down in, you know, to 116 and I think 3/4. What was the reason? What went wrong there?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what went wrong. And my opinion is that the scale was wrong. They came down and calibrated the scale to 118, and he hit 118 in the hotel room. He's not the only fighter that came in light. Several other fighters came in a bit under the limit. So he was shocked. You saw that 15 minutes before they came and calibrated the scale, took it up on a flat tile floor, and he weighed straight in at 118, and it comes down, and they announced 116 1/4. The interesting thing about it is that the other guy actually weighed 117, so if it really was 2 pounds light, then he would have been over. But other guys came in light, too. Mickey Garcia came in under, and there was others that day. So, of course, they looked to me for that, but I believe that there was something wrong with the scale. And back to Nonito, you know, in terms of the way he looked and so on, a lot of things happen along the way in camp. I mean, Nonito had 6 months or more off. He ballooned up to almost 145 pounds. There were some everybody gets minor injuries, but, you know, first it was his back, and then it was his hand, and then he got the flu, and he was on antibiotics, and then he got another hand injury. And, you know, there was a lot of things that along the way, it was a rather difficult camp. And so it is what it is. You know, but him coming in light wasn't the scale. My opinion is, and Nonito's of the exact same opinion, and so is Robert and everybody else in the camp, that the scale was off.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, so do you think due to just all that time away that Nonito maybe just came in and it was more a camp of just kind of losing weight and rather than kind of fine-tuning? I mean, to me, it's easier to make weight if you've been fighting several times a year and you're kind of in that groove. As opposed to, I'm off 9 months and now I got to come back. I got to begin from the beginning.
I agree, and Nonito's coming back from the Philippines here shortly, and, you know, he'll be right back in camp. And I think a lot of lessons were learned from that fight. Nonito was very disappointed, and it is what it is. He shut the guy out. He won all 12 rounds. I mean, he was disappointed, and it just is what it is. And it was a learning experience, and I think that the next outing he'll get that knockout.
Yeah, I expect him to. And you guys he's probably moving up in weight, too, I imagine.
Yeah, he's going to fight at 122.
He's hitting that age, too, where the body probably just wants to not starve down to 118. Well, Victor, a pleasure as always, enlightening as always. I really thank you for your time, and you know, hope to have you on again. I look forward
Great.
To it.
Gabe
yeah,
and Dave, Victor, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, Victor, pleasure. Thank you again, hey, if I ever get a chance, I'd like to come down there and try the snack, you know?
That'd be great. Come on down. We'd love to see you.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Take care.
You know, really good interview. You know, before I even start commenting about it or whatever, you know, it's something that I personally, myself, need to go back and re-listen to a lot of the stuff because there's so much to take in, you know? And everybody's going to have their opinion, and everybody's going to say, I wouldn't believe this guy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right, rightfully so, you can do that, you know. But there are some points that you have to sit there and listen and go, that makes a lot of sense, you know. The only thing I can point out right now that's still fresh in my head is the fact that he said he's not upset. I find that kind of hard to believe, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if I was sent to prison because of a guy that turned everybody else in, and he did, and he walked, I'd be pretty ticked off myself. You know what I mean? But I can also see what he means by that he's trying to clean up the sport, because this is not the first time he has spoken to us here with myself and Gable Montoya on Leaving the Ring, and he's also has shown the wheels have been moving in how he's trying to change the sport in drug testing and et cetera. So there is some proof there on what he has been expressing, you know. But like you said, he can't change everybody's mind. Gabriel?
Yeah, that's you know, the thing is I think, and she's the first guy to say it. You know, look, I did what I did, and you're either going to believe me or you're not going to believe me, and Victor understands that. You know, that to take everything he says as Bible, you know, you have to also look at the past and
right.
say, you know, hey, this guy, you know, this is his past, and do we believe him? And I think on some level you're right that you know, Memo walked, he didn't, and you know, Memo did what he did, and Victor made his choice, and yet they were kind of, you know, two of a kind in a sense. You know, I think, you know, Victor's The Cream and the Clear was certainly more advanced on some level than what Memo was doing, but certainly, you know, or allegedly doing, but certainly, you know, certainly he was doing something. You know, I mean, just reading all of the interviews that I did, or that I read rather, with Memo, there were one-on-ones with him, and he, I mean, if you're an athlete who's looking to cheat,
right.
you could read his interviews and kind of go, you know, this is kind of a step-by-step process, you know, talking about how to target a specific date, and then, you know, you go through one cycle, you clear out your system, you do another cycle, how to take long periods of time off, away, so that you can get it out of your system and do all your whole cycling, and then do your event, which always makes me suspect of athletes that take long breaks and then come back.
Right.
And particularly like with Nonito, I wasn't suspect of him watching that Narvaez fight because, one, his body didn't look particularly great, although
right.
he's never been a very ripped guy. That's he's
no.
not, he doesn't have Manny Pacquiao's physique. But also that he looked flat to me. He didn't look like – he didn't come back looking like incredibly sharp and like, wow, he hasn't lost a step in the 9 months he's been off. He did look like he lost a step or was missing a step.
Right, definitely.
So – you know, the whole thing, you know, with Victor, like you said, there's so many points to kind of take in. And rather than listening to him point by point and go, I don't agree with that, or I'm not buying that, or I'm selling that, just take it all in and kind of go, he understands you're doing, you have to take him with a grain of salt. You take him with a grain of salt, but let it soak in a little bit and think about it. You know, why is it that the carbon isotope ratio testing is not used? When it would be probably in conjunction with the current testosterone testing, be very, very effective in catching these guys. You know, why haven't the commissions decided to upgrade? Why were those notes lost? You know, all these things are very real questions, very, very honest questions, and should have answers to them, and yet they don't. You know, the thing I'm curious about is why, if you do have to cycle out, you know, why was the Mayweather camp or the Pacquiao camp so reticent in the beginning to do testing? And my initial theory was that it was a battle of egos. I will not be dictated to by you. I'm not, you know, we've been doing the regular testing. Why now? Why are you asking this? You know, and Floyd won't even answer why now. There's a lot of things there. It is a slippery slope. It's you know, a rabbit hole, whatever you want to call it.
Right. You know, and my thing too here, Gabe, is that if he I understand some folks are saying I'm not buying what he's saying. You know, this is a guy that was busted. He's in knee deep with this type of business. But at the same time, you're looking at he's really giving you valid information and of how to catch him again. And how to find out if these people are doping. And that's what I look at. It's like, okay, why is he making such an effort of not keeping it corrupted? You know, a guilty person a lot of the times is going to keep things very secretive and not really kind of – like Memo. Memo changed his name. Memo was recognized by a colleague, you know. So Memo obviously – didn't want to be noticed, didn't want to be seen, and guess what? He was caught and he was noticed. You know, where Victor has been kind of out in the scene, and he's kind of been an advocate of saying, look, this is what we need to do, and this is what we need to be, this is what we need to do to get things changed. Those are the points that I look at, you know, about EPO and HGH and all these other drugs that are out there that athletes, not just boxers, athletes, and that's the one thing too that I like to kind of point out too. He talked about a variety of different sports, where a lot of folks really look at boxing as this dark sport that only uses the bad. Every sport does when you got money and to play with it. When you have investors and sponsors and big overheads and athletes asking for these ridiculous amount of money, well, we're over here scrounging pennies and nickels and dimes, man, just to make ends meet. These guys are cashing in. I just find that funny.
Anyways. Yeah, there's so much there, and you do have to, you know, like I was talking with somebody earlier today, and we were discussing drugs in the sport, you know,
right.
And I brought up kind of an analogy of like pool players. You know, I used to be deep in that scene of, you know, competitive pool playing, and it was, you know, not on a national or international level by any means, but playing for, you know, playing for some money. And in that scene, it's a very drug-oriented scene in a lot of ways. Meth is kind of the drug of choice. If guys, it can focus you. You stay up for long hours in tournaments that'll last, you know, 4 or 5 hours, playing back and forth, you know, 100 a rack or whatever. And, you know, I certainly never partook in that sort of thing, but it was there. And if you're talking hundreds of dollars or even thousands of dollars at a time, then you translate that over to sports where the difference between the top guy and the bottom guy is, you know, tens of millions of dollars, sometimes $100 million if we're talking baseball. Why wouldn't you get that little edge? Even in one of the interviews, Heredia said the difference between world class and just very good is drugs. A lot of the time, you know, we're in a different era. This isn't the 60s or the 70s where
right.
The difference was hard work and good genetics. You know, the difference now is you get that little extra edge. I mean, is evolution happening that fast that guys are breaking records that are only 10 years old? Really? You know, I mean, I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, and certainly, you know, I would credit matchmaking as much as anything. I credit, you know, top ranked matchmakers, Trampler and Goodman, with Manny Pacquiao's success as much as anything. If you look at those guys that he's fighting, they're bigger, sure, and that's probably why he's going the distance more. But they're also limited in their own way, in their own unique ways, and it plays right to Manny's strength. I mean, it's no secret that all those fights, the odds are 8-1, 10-1, 9-1 against Marquez. You know, why is that? Because they're heavily handicapped as fighters.
Right.
And so the odds reflect that. Is it because Manny's such a phenom, or is it because he's a very, very good fighter fighting against a guy that's handicapped? You know, I mean, let's just be honest. You could make that argument as much as anything. I mean, Floyd always...
Well, here's the argument, too. I completely agree with what you're saying, you know, because I have always said that no matter what you're taking, no matter what you're doping, it's going to up, you know, stamina. It's going to up other little things that are added and needed in the sport. But at the same time, you got to know how to fight. And you got to have a little extra. You know, with Manny Pacquiao, and now we're finding out that Memo is in the camp of Juanma Marquez, I sit back and I think, if he is doing something, if he is doping up, okay, how much of that's going to be in play to help him out against Manny? And I don't think a whole lot. I really don't. You know, if you go back again, and we talked about throughout Manny's career, we talk about, you know, the matchmaking. You look at the way they matchmade him to make sure that those enhancements did shine. They were able to be exposed on television where you sat there and go, wow, this is a phenomenal guy. I'm seeing something of phenom. And it's really due because of the matchmaking, because of the handicap that fighters do bring in. Where with Marquez, he's not fighting somebody with a handicap. He's fighting somebody that can't fight.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, and if all things are equal, you know, I don't know how the weight is going to be, but I think it's interesting that you know, that Marquez is kind of, in a sense, of a weight jumper, similar to Manny Pacquiao in that, one, you know, against Floyd, he just didn't look physically right. He didn't look like a welterweight. Right now, he's looking pretty good.
No, he is. He's looking pretty good, but, and he looks pretty strong.
They're about the same. Yeah, they're about the same size. The difference has always been, you know, it's been very close. The difference was the knockdowns in those fights, but it's also that. you know, the Marquez is a very skilled fighter. That's what he brings to the table. He's a very
right.
well-conditioned fighter. I know what you're laughing at. And so it, you know, to me, that kind of makes the fight a little more even. But it's the track records of both. One guy looked like crap at welterweight. The other guy, or Manny Weight, I guess, or Floyd Weight in the case of Marquez, whereas the other guy has looked very good fighting at Manny Weight. So, you know, we'll see how the fight plays out. I personally, you know, think it's they got him at the right time, they got him at the right weight, and it's going to be a knockout. But, you know, that's just me. I'm going to try and I'll give Alex Ariza a call here. I texted him. He hasn't responded, but I know he gets a lot of calls. So I'll be right back. Let me try to pull him in.
I just wonder whose EPO is going to work better on that night, you know? Is it EPO versus each EPO? Or I know. I had to say that, though, you know?
I want to get the dogs around. I'm a little sleepy. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead. Fight fans, if you want to call into the show, talk about the interview we had with Victor Conte, well, my co-host is looking for Alex Ariza, so he can respond back to what Victor had to say. You certainly can. 347-215-7598. And I want to talk about our November issue of Undisputed Magazine's coming out. It should be out by early next week. There's a really good story, man. It's a sad one. It's one that I think we all should take some interest and pay attention to. There was a trainer by the name of Ronald Sims, who was the head coach of the Marines, and a young man by the name of Anthony Jimenez Jr. had passed away. It's on the video. One of our contributors, Steve Johnson, sent it to us. It's a really good article, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Gabe, are you back with Alex?
Have any headphones here?
Yeah, I'm here with back here with Alex Ariza, and I'm screaming because he can't hear us very well. He's in the gym. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you.
Alex, how are you doing, brother?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I hope you're doing well.
No, real well.
It's something of an explosive interview with your old friend Victor Conte. Obviously, there is some stuff. I'll get to that in a second. First off, I wanted to say, you know, I wanted to explain to you about the comments I made yesterday on the conference call while I was talking to Marquez and asking him. And my comment was based on the fact that the translator kept mentioning your name in response to regards to a loss that Fernandez and maybe Marquez were thinking of filing just on your comment. But the interviews, you didn't make any comments, did you?
No, I never made any comment about him. I didn't know who he was. In fact, the only thing that I had heard was that he had, you know, some members, a team from Usain Bolt's camp. So when, you know, I was just actually saying the guy a compliment, saying I'm glad that they went in that direction, and you know, he's obviously taking the fight serious, and I guess some other people did some research and, you know, dug up the dirt on the guy. But other than that, I've never even heard of him.
For you, do you even really think about it? I mean, what the other team is doing, does that matter to you, or is it really just about getting your guy in shape and you know, they can do whatever they want to do?
Of course. I mean, it's not like he's the first guy that popped on the scene that has some checkered background and using PEDs or juicing his fighters. So it's nothing new to me. Like I said, I forgot about the phone call 10 seconds after Steve Kim told me about it.
Now, Victor had some pretty strong comments regarding you. He saw your quotes calling him a snake oil salesman and a mental midget.
I never called him a snake oil salesman or a mental midget. I said that he didn't have the mental capacity, and I called him a con man and a hack. So I didn't use any of those. Those are the words I used.
Oh, okay. Well, I was looking at the Fight Hype interview that you did, but
why were those names mentioned like that? I mean, what is the animosity towards Victor right now?
Because he, you know, I honestly never had any. I didn't know that guy either. I, you know, usually generally don't just go out and just start saying things like that until I read some articles saying that he didn't feel that our program was as comprehensive and scientific as his, or then he said that it was that our gym needs to be focused on, and the fighters that come out of our gym need to be tested. He's just sort of, you know, talking shit out of his ass, and you know, with no basis for it. And so, you know, Freddie and I took it personal.
Mm-hmm. Now,
you know, we've never talked about whatever he does over in over where he's at. So, you know, why is he just trying to talk so he can get some airtime? Is he trying to get some paper time? What was the point of bringing us into whatever nonsense he was talking about?
He believes that there's animosity because he mentioned here on the show that if you were doing such a great job, then why is Freddie Roach calling him to work with him?
Well, you have to ask Freddie Roach that. But, you know, I mean...
Were you aware of that?
I'm doing such a... I've had over 20 consecutive wins. HBO got a little confused, 16-0. So, who's Victor Conte training? He's not even on anybody's radar that's even worth anything. So who's he training?
You don't think Nonito Dornier...
What guys has he made champion?
Right, but you don't think Nonito Dornier is worth anything?
He's a good fighter. There's not, again, you know, sometimes these guys, the things that I say, they need to be, somebody needs to explain what I'm saying to them because they're not understanding what I'm saying. He's a good, he's doing well and stuff like that, but, I mean, he's not really turning anybody's head. He's not jumping up weight class after weight class after weight class, knocking people out. All my fighters are doing that. When people see our fighters going to the ring, they see fireworks, the crowd pleasing. Every one of the fights have been like that, our fighters, all of them. Who does he have? What has he done?
Well, I mean, it certainly, you know, even before the Balco thing, you know, he had some world-class athletes before he turned.
That was then. You know what? This is today.
Right.
This is 2011, 2012. Today, what
fair
has
enough.
He done today?
That's fair enough.
I don't give a shit what he did 10 years ago or who he juiced up or what he did or how he cheated to win medals. That doesn't impress me.
One of the comments that he made, and he prefaces by saying, one, that it's just his opinion, and he said he based it on your behavior, that he thought your ego was kind of out of control. And he made a very strong comment that I'm sure you'd want to respond to, and that he said, it's just my opinion, but by the way he acts, this is me quoting, all I can say is he's a dope man and a fool. And
he's a what?
He said that you're a dope man and a fool.
A dope man?
A dope man. And that you're not really a strength and conditioning coach.
I'm a dope man. Meaning what?
Meaning that...
I don't know. You know what? I wasn't born in the late 40s. So some of those things and those terms and I don't know them. So you have to just, you know, bring them off the date.
Well, I think what he was saying was that basically you're not really a true strength and conditioning coach based on your methods, but that you're brought in as a PED guy.
Yeah, his suspicion, Alex, is that you're shooting him up.
He was a true man of science. We don't make, we don't speculate. I don't hypothesize. I don't assume, and I definitely don't have intuition. I either see it, prove it, touch it. And that's how real men of science do things. We don't sit there and then at the end of it be a pussy and say, it's my opinion about it. Man up and say what you think, but don't preface it with saying, it's my opinion. You know,
right.
He's supposed to be some hard ass from the joint. Why doesn't he act like it? You know,
wow.
Man up and say what you want to say. Don't be a bitch and hide behind my opinion. Trust me, I'm not Memo Heredia or whatever that dude's name is over there. I'm not gonna file any defamation suits. Say what you mean.
There's been all this suspicion, and there wasn't really any before Floyd asked for the Mayweather testing. I'm not gonna call it Olympic style because it's not Olympic style.
Right.
And one, I guess, a two-part question. One, why do you think all that suspicion is there? Do you think it's warranted, or is it based on your background? Where do you think it comes from?
What do you mean based on my background? What's my background?
Just other fighters that you've worked for. There's been other rumors that are out there. I mean, if you want
like
me to
who?
Say them.
Name one. Name one.
One rumor? One rumor I heard was that you were working with Diego Corrales. And then
Diego Corrales was juiced?
That's one rumor that I heard. That they
never heard that rumor before. Never heard that rumor. I don't mind that people bring up, you know, legitimate stuff, but and never in the years that I worked with Diego that I've ever heard that he was Jewish. That never came up. As far as that's my background.
The story that I heard was that Morales and him were working with you, and they both ended up in the hospital due to liver failure.
I'm not a journalist, but if I was, just like I'm into science, I would research whatever it is that I read, find out where it came from, and kind of and figure out where it originated from.
Liver failure? To be totally fair to you, I've never been able to substantiate it.
It should be easy. Google Diego Corrales, Eric Morales, liver failure. I'm sure at that time, when I was training them, they were world champions. Trust me, if they were in the hospital with liver failure, Google it. See if you can find it. Especially, you know, look at the Las Vegas Review Journal. I'm sure it's somewhere. But besides that point, none of my fighters have ever tested positive. Number one. Two, I've trained, I've taken Amir Khan from 130 pounds all the way to 140, now to be fighting at 147 pounds. He's on the British Boxing Commission over there. It's mandatory that they sign and allow random drug testing. So
right.
He's periodically drug tested.
And in a much more stringent way, from what I understand.
Absolutely. You know, Manny complies with every commission drug testing that they do. Chavez Jr., the same. Jorge Linares, the same. Vanish Martirosyan, the same. Now, I'm sorry that Victor can't explain that to himself. Or again, he's not capable of doing the same thing because he's limited in his abilities and his experience. This is a big boys game. Real strength and conditioning guys need to be at this elite level, not hacks, not guys with magic beans pretending that they do something. So if he can't accept it, I'm sorry that he's limited in his abilities. But we're making it happen on our end.
It's always been my theory that the initial reticence to do the Mayweather drug testing was based more on not wanting to be dictated to as opposed to anything to hide. Would you agree with that?
You know, I mean, here's the thing. You know, I'm a strength and conditioning coach. I don't have, you know, any real say. That's something or privy, you know, to what happens behind closed doors at Top Rank between Bob and whomever is
sure.
negotiating. And so I just don't know, to be honest with you. As far as I do know, Manny has never told me personally he's not going to do this, he's not going to do that, he's not going to do the other.
Do you think also that just all the speculation happened? Because I never really thought about it, you know, before. There seemed to be multiple stories coming out of the camp. He's afraid of needles, he does this. He's superstitious. You think if they would have just said, look, we're not going to be dictated to by you, things would have been a little different?
Listen, if you know Mayweather wants to fight Manny that bad, call Manny on the phone. He's not that hard to get a hold of. Just say, hey, Manny, I want to, you know, nothing personal. I want to fight you. It's good for the fans, good for the public. Let's make this happen. Let's sit down. You and I, a couple of men, we're fighters, and let's make this happen. If that's what he really wanted.
Sure.
I'm not privy to what they wanted. Trust me, if I wanted to fight somebody, I just would say, hey, listen, I want to fight you. I'm not going to go through this guy, that guy, or the other guy. So
sure.
I'm sure there's something more behind it. I'm not privy to it, but whatever's holding it up, I mean, it's up to those guys, those two, to step up and make it happen if that's what they want.
At the very least, just call Ellie Sec back, and maybe he can get a hold of Manny, you know? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. maybe he can be the middle guy in it.
Let's get out of hostile territory. Let's get into good territory. How's Manny doing? How's he looking?
He's doing great. He looks phenomenal. It's almost redundant hearing the same thing over and over. You know, you've never seen him so focused. You've never seen him. It's the same thing over and over. But he's got a different look to him. He's definitely, you know, performing differently in the gym. Yeah. I don't think we've gone through sparring partners like this in the past to where we are now.
I'll tell you what I've seen a little different, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, but this fight seems to be a lot more personal for him than any other fight because I've never seen him or heard him actually say he wants to knock out a guy. Why is there so much deep, like, you know, I guess motivation of hurting Marquez so much?
I think it resonated from all the things and the disrespect and the comments that Marquez has made about Manny, about him being implied. And, you know, he just kind of went overboard, I guess, in the Philippines with the whole wearing of the shirt thing. And, you know, Manny took that as an insult and disrespect, and, you know, he's going to make Marquez pay.
Absolutely.
Have you ever seen Manny this just taking it this personal? I mean, even just beyond the comments.
What I've never seen him do is fight with an intensity that during sparring that he's not with complete bad intentions, but he's not being friends anymore, you know, joking with the guys, tapping gloves, doing all that kind of stuff that he used to do in the past, you know, keeping it cool, you know, just getting, it's just fine, or it's not like that anymore. That's what I haven't seen. And I think that's maybe why Freddie got a lot of sparring partners that he didn't know and he wasn't familiar with, and there was no personal relationship there.
Well, I think he also met his tapping gloves quota with Mosley for at least two lifetimes. So,
you know, he didn't have any animosity towards, you know, Cotto or towards or Mosley or even, or, I mean, obviously Claudine. But there's clearly something going on with him personally with this dude. And, you know, I think it's a great motivation, me personally.
Yeah, I think so too. Let me ask you this. What happened with Jorge Linares? I mean, it didn't seem there was any adjustment. It looked like the guy was not willing or trying to adjust what Marquez was doing. In your eyes, what happened that night?
Well, you know, Linares suffered, you know, four facial lacerations that unfortunately our cut man couldn't get any control of. And so what happened was towards the 10th and 11th round, can I help you? Oh, what happened during the 11th and 12th round was the bleeding was, you know, getting so bad. I told him to run the last couple of rounds, just keep moving, because I knew we were so far ahead on points. But he later told me that against my better judgment, he stayed there and banged it out with the guy. At the end, he did lose, but I thought it was we took a loss, but I think it was a huge win for him. I saw fans that were booing him, cheering him. I think
right.
He won over the crowd. He stole the show. He showed that he was a warrior. He was valiant. And he said, you know what? He goes, bro, I wanted to run. He says, but I was so afraid because if I could see the blood just, you know, pouring out of my face, I could only imagine what it looked like. Face said, I just was scared that they were gonna. He was scared that they were gonna stop the fight anyway. So he stayed in there, and you know, but nevertheless, you know, obviously it was a premature stoppage. I mean, if anybody's seen, you know, real fights, I mean, why didn't he? You know, the ref had ample opportunity to stop that fight anytime he wanted. If that's what it was. But Linares was never hurt. He was never rocked. He never got wobbled or shook. I mean, I can think of all of us here can talk about 20 fights that we've seen fighters get knocked down, get back
right.
up, or take a beating, and they still let it go on. Remember, this isn't a 10-round eliminator or something. This is a world championship fight. I mean,
right.
isn't this reason why guys like us, me, train our fighters so hard and to prepare them for adversity like that in the ring?
Yeah.
Only thing I saw. So
why not let him finish?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why not let Linares finish?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what he trained for.
4 seconds left in the round. I mean, to me, though, the only thing I saw, and I was, you know, ringside, but I'm far back. I wasn't as close as you, obviously, was when he took a couple shots, and then he went straight back to the ropes and kind of hung there and didn't throw anything. I almost thought that
point. Yeah, but the rule isn't the rule, you know, after five or six unanswered punches, the ref is supposed to say, answer back, throw something back. You didn't even give him that. You let the guy throw three punches, and he stopped it. And which, by the way, those three didn't even land. You can check the video.
They didn't land. Yeah,
no,
I watched the video.
That's what I'm saying. You got to give him a chance. I think that there was something underlying that this guy was just looking to stop it. I remember when Manny was beating Cotto, you know, they stopped it several times to wipe the blood out of it. They called timeout. Are you okay? When he was hitting Margarito, you know, they called timeout. Can you still see out of that eye? Not once did that happen. And Linares was a bloody mess.
He was ridiculously bloody. Did they even come to
yeah,
the corner and say, you know, I'm thinking about stopping it? Or was there any indication?
they kept coming to the corner, and I'd ask Linares, I go, "Are you okay? Do you want me? You know, do you want me to stop this?" I mean, he goes, "No, no, I'm fine." He goes, "I'm telling you, I'm not. He's not." The only thing that was shaking him was the fact that he didn't see some of the punches coming, and that was the fact that was, you know, surprising him. But he says, "He's not hurting me." He goes, "No, no, I'm good to go. I'm good to go." You know, and it's like you said, you know, he just started getting his second win. But fortunately, the WBC felt that it was, you know, that there was enough controversy and the early stoppage that they ordered an immediate rematch. So again, against my better judgment, you know, he went out there. I think he won this crowd over, and I think everybody's going to look forward to this rematch.
Oh yeah, definitely. All of us.
Yeah, it's a board. Yeah, I can't.
Great
I'm going to be there wherever it is. It was just unbelievable. I think it certainly answered questions about Chin. It answered questions about heart with him. The only thing maybe now he needs to sit down in his punches a little bit, maybe not move so much. It seemed like he gassed a little bit.
It's hard, when you have, you got to remember, I have a couple of guys, you know, Amir, I have Manny, I have Chavez Jr., they all came there to support him. And, you know, the pressure was on, and anytime Manny goes back, you know, looking at you, making eye contact, maybe the nerves got to him a little bit, but. You know, we'll know what to do next time.
Right.
So, to finish up, knockout or decision with Marquez, based on what you're seeing?
A knockout. You know, I mean, if people are, I mean, reading or putting anything into what I said, I'll clarify for them. You know, I was wondering why they got Marquez so big. Wasn't because of how or what, or it was because I was thinking strategy. What's the strategy behind making the fighter that big? Well,
right.
They're making him that big so he can come in and bomb your fighter out or the other guy out. So, I mean, because of realistically or strategic-wise, you know, that kind of size isn't going to help him down, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 rounds later. So my guess is that Marquez isn't going to let this go into the hands of the judges. He's going to go in there and make a statement. And, you know, he got as big as he could and as strong as he could so he can go in there and go toe-to-toe with Manny and try to take him out early because that is his only shot. I mean, if you know something else that I don't know strategically that could come out of, you know, getting that big, explain it to me.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, it's like, well, we put on weight the right way and everything, and I just don't see it. To me, and obviously you're not a part of putting the fight together, I look at it like Top Rank got Marquez at the right time, the right weight, and I'm saying Manny and 8. I just don't think that above 135 Marquez is a viable fighter.
I mean, I always said it even in the beginning, strategically, if I was training Marquez, I wouldn't have let him get over 138. I had to make sure that he was, you know, he kept his speed, kept his accuracy, his timing. You know, Manny, we did this, you know, this gradual move and weight, even with Amir and all these guys, you know, over a period of time, you know, they adjusted to it.
Right.
And they didn't ever carry it well, and it's, everything that we put on him is functional. So they've done very well with you know, the move up in weight and adding the extra muscle. But just looking at Marquez physically, I've never seen him like that.
Well, and not everybody is able to be a weight jumper. And I think fans, when they look at a Roy Jones or Mayweather and now Manny, they think, well, everybody should be able to do this. I mean, they want Martinez to go to, you know, 168 when you look at him.
Exactly. I agree with you. You know, I mean, I've always said muscles don't win fights. I mean, the last guy that looked, you know, phenomenal physically was Zab Judah when he fought Amir Khan. Oh, wait. Who trained Zab Judah for that fight?
Wow.
Conte did, right? That's what I thought. What round did my guy knock him out at? Was that the fifth?
Oh, it was a low blow, though.
Yeah. Well, then he got beat up by a dope and a dope man, and what was the other thing?
A fool.
And a fool. So then
right.
He fight a lot to a dope and a fool. So what did that make him?
Well, to be fair, you know, I think Steve made this great analogy about Zab Judah. He's like, you know, a really nice-looking classic Chevy that doesn't have an engine underneath the hood.
You know, it was kind of funny because when we're in the back in the medical, he said, you know, he took off his shirt. He goes, look at this, Alex. You know you want to look at this. And I was like, yeah, bro, trust me, man. You look like an Adonis. I go, but muscles don't want to fight, my man.
That's right.
So You know, I even told Amir. Amir was like, Jesus Christ, he's big. I go, trust me, Amir. It's all looks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's aesthetic. It looks good, but doesn't mean anything. And obviously on the other side of the hill, they don't know what they're doing. So, I mean, it is
well,
what it is.
It's interesting, too, Victor even said that this is the last time he works with somebody that doesn't come to his camp. They did it kind of remote. As opposed
There's
to
always
you
an
guys
excuse.
Do it.
There's always an excuse.
I'm
always
curious,
an excuse.
Too. That's fair enough. Everybody, especially with Zab, there's always an excuse. Why was Manny so successful in moving up so fast? Because he jumped like 130 to, I think, 142 in about 8 months. Was
Here's
it
the
that
thing.
His body was screaming to move? Or
I think we got to remember, I have a great team. I always want to give credit to my team. At that time when we first started moving Manny up, I had Andrea Macias. She was a kinesiology out of kinesiologist out of San Diego State as well. Cherry Tom, who's a registered, did her from UCLA, did her internship at Cedars-Sinai. Amazing sports. Amazing sports nutritionist. Sports dietitian. I'm sorry, big difference. So I had a phenomenal team, and you know, when you're making those kind of moves and things like that, it would have been irresponsible for me to think that I could have done it on my own. So they deserve all the credit as well. And not to mention I had Freddie, who was so involved in everything, you know, from a obviously a professional fighter standpoint of view and the things that we wanted to do. It didn't happen overnight, but it took a lot of time. And we got together and we were able to brainstorm things, you know, bounce ideas off of. You know, sometimes there's things I don't know. And,
right.
You know, I can go to Terry and I can go to Andrea and we can troubleshoot these things. To make sure that, you know, whatever we come up with the best plan, that's, you know, we run the risk versus reward, and we've been very successful with it.
Absolutely.
So
well,
I just think we had a strong team, and I think we're the best team in boxing, and that's why, you know, we've been so successful.
And we hope you continue with your success, Alex. And, hey, man, thanks again. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure when you get on here with us on Leaving the Ring and speak to myself and Gabriel.
Very straightforward. I appreciate that you
answered
the questions and even the, you know, the rumor stuff and all that. Most people would flip out and hang up the phone like Bob Arum did to me yesterday.
Listen, we have nothing to hide on our end, and it's just you know, I have nothing to hide, and anytime, you know, you guys want to call, you want to call. Believe me, we're open book. We have, you know, it's open wherever we're at. So whatever you guys want, you know, I'll tell you.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
Well,
all right, man.
Yeah, definitely. You take care, brother.
All right,
see you in Vegas.
Guys.
All right.
I'll see you in Vegas.
Take care.
Take care. Take care.
Bye.
Well, there you go. Alex Ariza, the conditioning coach for Manny Pacquiao here on Leaving the Ring. And rebuttal back what Victor Cote was saying about him, about being a dope man and a fool. Both guys, you know, got some pretty good valid points. When he said he was an open book, I was going to ask the question, but I wussed out. I was going to say, okay, since you're being an open book right now, what's in the juice, man?
What's in the shake?
But I was like, you know what? I think we beat him up enough. You could tell how heated he was by the remarks and the comments of Victor Cote. Same thing with Victor. You know, you could really hear the passion between both of these guys. So, always want to get them back on. So we don't want to upset them too much, you know. Anyways, we need to talk some boxing here. We got some fights coming up this week. We got
fights coming up.
Oh, man, not just some fights. We got some amazing fights, some good fights that are going to be happening this Saturday. These two fights should not disappoint. First, you got Glenn Johnson versus Lucian Bute on Showtime. Then you got Angulo, El Perro, versus James Mandingo Kirtland. It's going to be explosive. HBO and Showtime competing against each other with two great, great, great fights. Hey, let's patch in some fight fans really quick. Gabriel, we want to talk about these upcoming weekend fights.
Yeah, I need to get my dope man in full on. So, yeah, let's get some people to talk.
Absolutely, man.
That should be the name of our show, Dope Man and Fool. I could be the fool if you want.
But, we should, actually, for the intro, we should put on NWA, man, the Dope Man, Dope Man. Anyways, let's patch in CT. Who wants to talk Kirtland and Angulo, and pretty boy Floyd Mayweather, who calls himself Money. What's up, brother? You're on live right now. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, bro. You know, just running through it.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, looking forward to this fight coming up this weekend. Definitely, I wish I could have seen it like a couple years ago, like everybody else. But, you know, I'm glad that it is happening. I think in this fight, I think it's going to be very explosive for the time that it lasts. But I think in this fight, I think Kirkland's style is going to play against him just because of the simple fact when the Japanese guy who hit him with punches were straight right hands down the middle. And I think with this, he's going to get too aggressive. I see Kirkland only fighting like one style that I've always seen him fight.
Right.
And I think versus Angulo, I think, you know, he's going to run into some shots, and he's going to feel those punches. He's going to run into those shots, just like he did against the Japanese guy. And I think he's going to fall. And I think, you know, I think Angulo's a little bit more versatile than Kirkland is. You know, Kirkland kind of comes in with his head straight up in the air. And I think, you know, that's my thought on this fight. He's going to run into something. I think it's going to be a very fast fight. And I think he's going to get stopped in fifth round.
You know, man, I got a completely different take. I'm going to make my pick at the end of the show, but I'm going to tell you what I see here. Two guys that really are kind of, they mirror each other in style. They come forward. Only one of them, though, is a little bit quicker. And I always go back and look at that Kirtland stoppage, you know, and I look at his eyes. His eyes were never glazed. He didn't have a dazed look. So it really told me that there was something going on with the weight. He had no legs walking into that fight. He gets dropped on a jab. There's something physically wrong with the kid. That's what I looked at. So I'm not really buying into those knockdowns. What I'm looking at is who lands their punches first and who's going to adjust. Can Angulo adjust? Is Kirtland going to be the boxer? I don't think neither one of these guys are going to be able to adjust to that unless they're in some serious, serious trouble. And that's going to be the pace of it when it comes to that first bell ring for the first round, is who lands the first shot, whose punch is going to be harder. And I have to tell you, to me, Kirtland is going to land that significant punch. That punch is going to tell you the whole story for the remainder of the fight. But also, too, like you said, he got dropped. He got, you know, he was dropped numerous times. We've seen Kirtland get, you know, get punched flush, but not from really big punchers. Angulo's a big, big puncher. But also, we've seen Angulo get hurt by lesser punchers than Kirtland. This is a very interesting fight. I can't wait for it, man. It's going to be explosive. This type of fight, even though, like you mentioned a little earlier, should have happened a couple years, I don't agree with that either. Why? Because both those guys had a lot to prove. Here, I like the fact they're on a crossroad path for both of them. I like the fact that they're both have a story, and I like the fact that both of these guys haven't changed for anybody when it comes to style-wise. This fight should have been on a pay-per-view if it would have continued. This is the kind of fights that we actually get up for and want to watch and barbecue and drink and do all the other dumb things that we do, scream our heads off when we see a fight. This is an exciting fight, Gabriel.
Yeah, I can't wait, dude. I feel very I'm nervous. I'm excited. I just think that it's going to be an absolute war. I haven't, in my whole time as a boxing writer, which I think I'm in my seventh year now, I haven't felt like this since I was just, you know, just a fan watching Trinidad versus Hopkins and that lead up to that fight where I was clearly I'm a big Trinidad fan. James is, you know, the first prospect I ever spotted as a writer and said, that guy's going to be somebody someday. And I've gotten to know Angulo very well over the last few years. And it's, I got to be perfectly honest with the fans, as I always am. I almost feel a little too emotionally attached to both guys to be perfectly objective and make an outright pick. That said, you look at Angulo's style, technically, he throws straighter punches. James isn't exactly the most wide punching guy in the world. He's got a very unusual style. It's almost Mayorga-esque in a sense, in that it is kind of unorthodox. You know, the way he kind of moves, and he actually is kind of nice at picking off shots. He doesn't, you know, there's several types of defense. There's slipping, there's ducking, there's blocking, and then there's catch and counter. There's catching shots coming in, picking them off with your hands, and then returning. James tends to move towards that direction of either ducking out of the way or trying to pick it off as it's coming in. And because he's so aggressive, he comes in, he eats that right hand. He ate it from Alan Conyers. He got stopped by Ishida. somebody, you know, Ernie, our good friend, just reminded me he got countered by with a right hand by Berrio, and he got hurt. To me, in a sense, I'm almost throwing out those three fights with Kenny Adams. And I know people say, well, you can't do that because he got stopped by Ishida. But when you look at the facts of those training camps, didn't get much sparring. He dropped 22 pounds leading into the Berrio fight, which he found out on a Friday. He came into camp on a Tuesday. The fight was Friday. No, he found out Saturday. Came in Tuesday. The weigh-in was, you know, Thursday for a fight on Friday. You can't drop 22 pounds in that short
right.
time and have any sort of legs. It was even worse for the fight with Ishida, where he dropped like 20-something pounds, like 20 pounds. It was late almost to the weigh-in because he was in the sauna with a plastic suit on, dropping the last bits of weight. That's not a good training camp. Now, flash forward to now, this is his third fight in a row with Ann Wolf, his sixth fight total this year. Third fight is usually when people start to gel again or gel in the first place when you're with a new trainer. The fact that they've had James, and he told me this on the conference call, that he was sparring again with two people at the same time. They had a full, you know, battle camp, basically. That tells me that Ann thinks he's at 100%. Rather than the 90% or the 80% that he was at for those first two fights back. And then you flip it over, Angulo has fought a minute and 30 seconds in the last almost 2 years. And before that, I think it was April of 2010 was the last time he went past the first round. Now, James hasn't gotten past, you know, two, three rounds either in a long time. So I think the mentalities of both, If they can handle each other's power, if James's chin isn't as bad as the Ishida fight said, we're going to get into that sixth round, and then it's going to come down to who can handle the long haul.
Right.
Angulo carries his power late, as he showed against Julio, but James hits very hard, as he showed against Julio, and made him quit after six rounds. It's an incredibly even fight with a lot of intangibles, a lot of things you can throw out here. I mean, you know, Cintron outboxed Angulo. James has never been known to be much of a boxer, although he did look pretty good at having to box against Aussie Duran, who just gave Gonzalez a hell of a trouble and
exactly.
arguably beat him. So I'm not making my pick to the end of the show either. I think it's just a very even fight. I really can't pick. I've been trying to. My heart says, you know, James. My head says Angulo. My fight fan says this is going to be a great, great fight.
Yeah, definitely. CP,
oh, yeah.
You want to talk Floyd, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was reading yesterday, I think it was, you know, how he wants to fight May 5th. And, I'm hoping it's going to be Pacquiao.
Right.
But, I mean, if I can get on the subject, I don't want to be on here too long, but if I can get on the subject about just fighters who, you know, physically of that night that took steroids that night, you know, how they look. You know, I remember Robert Guerrero saying one time when he fought Orlando Salido, how strong Salido looked that night, how strong he felt that night.
Right.
Fernando Vargas and stuff like that. That's why I question myself. I don't want to think like Pacquiao is doing steroids, but if you look at the way he's able to take shots now, you know what I mean? The way he gets hit in the face and he's just able to bounce back from punches, it's odd to me. But
the times that he's been knocked out, he wasn't knocked out to the chin. It's not like his chin improved. He's
right.
always had a good chin. It was
right.
He was knocked out to the body in those fights. And as far as I know, and I've asked Victor this flat out, I think we asked him on the show, is there anything that can improve your punch resistance, your chin? And he said no. You know, and the only way to really do that is conditioning. So maybe Manny has conditioned himself at this point, and he's so strong in that regard that he's able to walk through shots. But he's always had a good chin.
Right.
And he'll actually say, you know, he was hurt pretty bad, particularly the body against Margarito.
Right.
But he got hurt against, I believe it was, I want to say Cotto kind of hurt him to the face or to the chin. And I think Claudi actually wobbled him early on but didn't know it. And I think, you know, he's got 50-something fights. I think he's good at hiding. It's, you know, there's a couple ways to hide it. It's either kind of move away, there's smile, or there's throw a bunch more punches and get aggressive.
Actually, I thought him getting with Margarito was not hidden very well at all. We saw
he
started trying to back up and dance a little bit more than we've seen him do before. But, yeah, definitely. CT, put you on hold, brother. We got to let a few other guys patch in and talk some boxing here with us. Always appreciative. Don't hang up, brother.
All right, thank you.
Let's get in some other fight fans, man. Let's patch in our boy, D. Big D. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's up, brother?
Dave? No.
What's up?
Dave?
How you
ready,
doing,
man? This is what we've been waiting on.
This is what we've been waiting for, man. This is our Super Bowl.
it's probably, I mean, shoot, probably I've been this amped for a fight since Floyd and Mosley.
Right.
I believe James is going to pull it out. I think he's going to stop him early. I think, you know, he's got to.
You know, we always...
After evaluating everything, man, if it goes late, Angler
right.
might do him late, man. I don't want to see it go late.
You know, you got that old saying, when a pet bull grabs a hold of you, he doesn't let go. And that's what Curlin's got to make sure with El Perro. Make sure that bite doesn't cling on because it's going to be very difficult for Curlin to shake off. If anything, Angulo's mm-hmm. going to keep that pressure. He's going to be on top of him. And that's why this fight is so, to me, it's so interesting. To me, you're going to see the true character. You know, we talk about the ring and how the ring, it's almost like a lie detector. You know, you could say you're this and you could say you're that. But once you get in that ring, we're going to find out. And these are two fighters that we haven't really been able to get exposed of the real character. I mean, Angulo got exposed that he can get outboxed. But he hasn't been exposed of what happens when that punch is just not enough. What happens when you get pushed back? Same thing with Kirtland, you know, when you get a really strong guy. Yeah, Noshida was able to drop him, but he was continuously coming forward. He was continuously not really worried about what was being thrown back at him because he was looking for that perfect punch. Is he going to be able to do that when he feels the power from El Perro? I don't know. This, to me, is going to be – we're going to see some characters, some new characters in the ring between the both of these fellas. It's going to be a great, great fight.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little upset if he don't fucking win it, man. I got $300, or almost $300 on this fucking thing, man. So I believe he's going to do it, though, man. I feel deep down he's gonna stop him. I think we can see the old Kirkland and going there and handle his business. What gets me is a lot of people ain't hardly seeing nobody taking Kirkland to win this thing.
No, I know a lot of people are writing him out, man. A lot of folks are writing him out.
Expert picks, I think the only guy that picked him, Lem Satterfield sent me his article on it, and he actually wanted me to contribute to it, and I saw actually Steve was in there, but I think it was only Tim Smith that picked James, and he said that he's a better boxer than the people realize, and I always go back to that Aussie Duran fight, and to me that win actually kind of went up in stock, in my opinion, after watching Flawless Gonzalez, get struggling with Duran. Because going into that fight, I remember trying to get a hold of James. I don't think we connected because he was living in his car. And he sparred, I think, 8 rounds for the whole fight. Basically just killed himself to make the weight. And I think at that time he was like 24. So he was kind of young enough to do it, you know, to kind of not really train all that great and just go in there and wing it. And he couldn't get Duran out of there. So he had to box, and he started turning him, getting in close, landing a couple shots, turning off to the side, boxing that way. And it was the first time I said, okay, this guy's not a one-trick pony. And, you know, he was a good amateur. That's one of the reasons he was signed by Cameron Duncan. He's got a solid amateur background. He just prefers to go to battle and take you to a deep end. And the thing I've always said about James's pressure is it's unlike, you know, your standard Mexican pressure fighter. It's a pressure that's, you know, it's like Spinal Tap. He goes to 11, you know, and he takes it to a place where the other fighter, you can, you know, think about it in your mind and you can prepare for it, but it's almost like preparing for a Pacquiao or preparing for a Floyd. There's really nobody that can duplicate that kind of pressure, a guy that deals with two people in sparring at the same time, who's going to just keep coming no matter what you do and throw volume at a not only like a high clip, but just right up close to you, nonstop. Maybe, you know, as Hopkins says, you know, you throw 1,000 punches, to me 1,000 openings that I can counter.
Right.
But I wonder. I'm very curious to see Angulo deal with it. And, you know, this is so cliche. It's like, you know, saying with, you know, like Madden, you know, whoever has the most points wins. But whoever can take the other guy's punch we're going to find out early on. If Angulo lands that right hand on the button, and I'm sure he will, if nothing happens, then I think it's James's fight in a lot of ways, just because he's going to be more aggressive, be throwing more punches. And, you know, I mean, it could be Chinese water torture. The first five don't get you, but eventually the right will get through. But I tend to think if James can handle the power, he's got kind of the skill set in a lot of ways, even if he doesn't always use it, to win this fight.
Right. Right, definitely.
Are y'all afraid of Dave? I mean, suppose he wins this thing clear, man, and these judges fuck him over, man. You afraid something like that could happen?
It's something like that could happen, but I don't think it's going to go to a decision, to tell you the truth. I just don't see that. You know, unless one guy decides to become a boxer, you know, and start dancing, which is possible. That's why I say we're going to find out both men's true character in this fight. But I don't know. It could be possible. It's in Mexico. But then again, you know, it can happen here in the States, too. We've seen that. You know, we can't even point the fingers anymore to different countries because here in the States, they do it all the time.
That's, to me, a really key question is, you know, they have the same promoter in Golden Boy.
Right.
And they have the same managers. They have co-managers in Mike Miller and Cameron Duncan. And you have to ask, okay, who, if you were going to do a cash-out scenario, who would you cash out? Are you cashing out James, who got knocked out but has won two fights since and can fight anywhere in the world as long as he gets an exemption to leave the country, which he clearly, you know, just got? Or is the money go with Angulo, who's the new signing, and you could do big fights only in Mexico with until he gets his visa? Because I haven't heard anything on that situation. So you kind of wonder, if somebody's being cashed out, who is it? And why would you cash out Angulo? You'd have to say you're just hoping for a great fight and two stars emerge out of this fight. Or James gets iced early and you go, well, you know, that's the end of that contract, and you know, it's kind of it's like a high end risk, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's a big gamble.
Gabe, it ain't happening, Gabe. I ain't even trying to think that scenario, Gabe.
$1,000 off the line, man. You know,
James Kirkland homer than me.
All right,
it's a message for Manny and Floyd. Look at these two guys. With really, both of them could have taken on a bunch of easy fights and kind of built back up and fought for probably the same money. But they decided to take a risk. And James didn't blink when he heard he could fight Angulo in Mexico. It's a lesson for Manny Floyd and Vonis Monerosian, in my opinion.
It's a great fight.
Make more of them.
Definitely, we're going to lose, though, man. We got to get him on the show, man. Hopefully,
James?
I think he's going to win. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, we're
him on the show,
try.
Man, next week or in the future.
Right.
He said it would be first.
All right, Dave, I'm going to put you on hold, brother. Don't hang up. Let's patch in some other fight fans here. Want to talk boxing on Leaving the Ring. Ricky Lopez Jr., you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
What's up, fella? I just wanted to let you guys know, man, this guy Ariza, he sure is humble, huh? I mean, I kind of disliked the guy before this interview, but, man, you can stat me with a hater on this guy because – just the way he talks and about, you know, my fighter's this, my fighter. Oh, in the corner, I told an artist to run away. Dude, who the fuck is this guy? This guy's a strength and conditioning coach. He's not Roach. You know, when Macca was there and Fortune, they were doing good. They still had champions. This guy comes in and he makes himself, you know, sound like he's like, you know, Jesus, dude, and he's not, you know?
Yeah, I mean, your perception says a lot. I mean, I
think your perception, too. That's why it rubbed Victor Conte so wrong, you know?
It's just the way he comes off. Like, he hasn't been involved in the sport of boxing for what? He's been around for what, 5 years? Or, I don't know. It's like, okay, for another example, when him and Khan had a fallout, what did he do? He turned around and he started, you know, talking to the media about, you know, that Khan's team went in the hotel and took contracts out. And, you know, now he's talking about this kid, this Irish kid that's fighting Peter McQuillan, saying that he's lazy and he didn't want to do. Like, you don't, you know, there's certain stuff that you don't do. And you don't turn your back on, you know, whatever happened. We don't need to be hearing, like, you know, little stuff like that. Just, like, little things that irk me about this guy. Now, after this, you know, how he was getting really defensive at first. And, man, it's like, this guy needs to be, you know, someone needs to put this guy on check because just the way he comes off, you know, it just rubs me the wrong way.
No, I could see that. I think a lot of people it rubs them the wrong way, you know, but hey, you know, what can we do?
Exactly. But it was still a good interview, though, so I'm glad you guys had him on.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, brother.
I thought it was only fair, too. You know, we had Victor, and he made, you know, some pretty strong comments, and you know, it's only fair to get the other guy. And I've always wanted to ask him about the rumor that I asked him about, and he answered it. And, he was, and you know, to be fair to him, I didn't do the Google, but, you know, I looked into that rumor, and I've never been able to substantiate it. So I've got to, in all fairness, say that. You know,
right.
It was just a rumor. And to me, you know, like he was kind of making a point about, you know, you're a journalist. And so I always just kind of laugh and say, well, I am a journalist. And
well, that's why you're asking.
Also, too, I was going to try to point it out to what he was talking. I was going to say, well, that's why we're asking the source, you know. Well, that's the whole purpose.
And I can't ask Diego. So, you know,
right.
What am I supposed to do, you know?
Well, right away he was like, well, who, let me know, give me an example. And it was like he was being really defensive, and I didn't understand why.
I think he was really defensive just because of the fact that the accusations and you know, the attack that's been going on, you know, Victor Conte. I think, you know, we've had him on numerous times, and he's always been very cordial and open with us to tell us, you know, and even too, he's kind of stepped on his own tongue on particular things, but you know, that's just human nature, man, you know, and it's going to rub some folks wrong, and then it's not going to rub other people wrong. It's definitely not going to rub the Manny Pacquiao fans wrong.
So what's your guys' take on Marquez's physical appearance? Because now maybe like three shows ago, I brought it up on how he was looking, like he was getting really big, and now
right.
Everybody's talking about it. So, what's your guys' take on it now that you know, like, your real take on, you know, what do you guys think is going on over there?
I think he looks hot. What? well, as a 38-year-old man, I am a little surprised that, granted, I'm not a world-class athlete by any stretch of the imagination. I think I've smoked a pack of cigarettes tonight. But it is a little odd when you see a guy jump up real fast and do that. Although at the same time, I think they learned from that first camp. That was one of our questions for Nacho. I don't know if on the radio, but I know I asked him in person, what did you learn from the first time? And they knew they just made some mistakes the first time. You could see his body from then to now, but you know, I don't want to get a lawsuit from Heredia, who's filming it on YouTube, apparently his lawsuit against Ariza.
Well, real quick, not to cut you off, but that was another thing that Ariza had said, was like, oh, well, speak your mind. I'm not gonna file a defamation suit like so-and-so. Well, didn't Pacquiao do the same with Mayweather? Why didn't he bring up Pacquiao when he said that?
Well, but he didn't. You know, Pacquiao did it. Like he said, he's not in charge. You know, that's Mike Conn's and those lawyers deciding to drain Manny's account in some other way. You know, and also, at the same time, though, I actually kind of agree with Manny's lawsuit. I mean, Floyd, I think that what Ariza said applies to Mayweather in the sense that here he is kind of making these kind of roundabout accusations, or there's one videotape that I know is in part of the lawsuit that a fan took, and he said, you know, flat out, Manny's on those power pellets, yo.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, maybe he's talking about the video game, but probably not. And yet, when it comes time to do a deposition, he won't come in and do it.
Yeah.
And those depositions were before the training camp. They were also during it. Sorry, but you know, you need to own up to your words. And I kind of would agree with that with Alex. And you know, if you're going to say something, say it. It's why rather than wait for Alex to leave and say, well, you know, I can give an example about a rumor, I took it straight to him. Same thing,
yeah.
You know, with Bob Arum when he tried to get it, bully everybody into not asking questions he didn't want to ask. I'm just going to straight up say it. I'm sorry, but that's my job, you know, and I don't know. I agree with it. And I'm curious to see where that lawsuit goes. I mean, right now it's just draining Manny Pacquiao's coffers. Sort
right.
of like his entourage.
Absolutely. Hey, Ricky, man, I got to put you on the hold, brother. Thank you again for calling in. It's always a pleasure.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Our pleasure.
Hey, let's call in. Actually, let's let one more fight fan want to talk about Kirtland and Angulo, and then we're going to call in Reyes and talk to him about a sensational Saturday night fight. you know?
Yeah.
Also, we haven't even talked about Glenn Johnson and Lucian Bute or Brandon Gonzalez against Ozzy Duran, which a lot of folks felt that Ozzy won that fight or should have ended up in a draw. So let's patch in. Rob Regal, what's up, brother? You're on live right now. Leave it in the ring. You want to talk Curtly and Angulo? What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, guys, just real quick. Y'all pretty much hit the nail on the head. That's the beautiful thing about this fight, and that's I think it's why it's going to be a good night. I just hope that both guys come out winners, you know, and that it's not too short of a fight. One guy doesn't get blown out because both guys see weakness in each other. You know, Kirkland sees Angulo, you know what, he's only had a few, you know, a minute and a half or so of work in a long time. And then on the other side of the ring, Angulo's looking at Kirkland saying, hey, you know, this guy's damaged goods or whatever. So I hope it should be a good one. You know, with a lot of these letdowns recently, I think it's going to be a good breath of fresh air.
Right.
But yeah, y'all pretty much already hit the nail on the head. What I'm pretty mad about is this Mayweather thing. You know, I was watching these, everybody's already starting to get hyped up and happy again. And everybody's going to get happy. And what's going to happen if this thing doesn't happen again, I think it's going to be a serious blow.
Let me say something really quick, okay? Because the whole announcing I'm coming back on May 5th and all that. If you look at the trend that Floyd has done, let's talk about Hatton, when he was going to fight Hatton, when Pacquiao was going to fight Hatton, when Pacquiao was going to fight Mosley. He has a way of, before the fight is close, he has a way of interrupting any type of publicity or any type of media frenzy to redirect away from Manny to come back to him. Have you noticed that?
That's something he does all the time.
Yeah.
That YouTube video from before when he's saying all the racist remarks. But the only thing I'm kind of pissed off about is that a lot of the casual media they're already picking it up and running with it. You know what I mean? I'm just I was kind of hoping they would just ignore it, and when it happens because I mean, saying you're gonna fight on May 5th, I think it might be Alvarez, you know, Cinco de Mayo, but. and against the little guys, not being specific, but I just wanted to hopefully that's going to be a serious blow. It's going to make us look real bad, you know, because it's going to be like, again, you know what I mean, because everybody's running with it once again. But yeah, I appreciate also I just had a question for y'all real quick. I know y'all got stuff to get to. I caved in because it's down the street and I'm a boxing head. I didn't want to go. I'm going to a Chavez fight, but would it be a bad taste if I just ordered my Montevideo shirt right now?
No, wouldn't, man.
I'm gonna do it. So I'm gonna go. Screw it. I saw some guys on the card I want to see, but so yeah, right, yeah. I appreciate it, y'all. Great show as always.
Hey, brother, thank you, man. It's guys like you that call in that make the show great, man. I appreciate you calling in.
Hey, y'all. I love D, man. Y'all gotta have him a special guest every now and then. That guy's funny, man.
Oh man, he's great.
He's got a Kirkland Jones, so you know I gotta have him on.
He's a leave in the ring soldier, man. He's been a soldier with us for quite some time.
OG.
He is, man. All right, Rob, thanks for calling in, brother. You take care.
I appreciate y'all.
There you go. I don't know if we should make our pick really quick or call in our next guest. What do you think, man? You know, I want to go really quick about Brandon Gonzalez and Duran Ozzy. I tell you what, the Brandon Gonzalez that I've seen, and I even told him, he looked a little flat-footed. He didn't really have any steam behind his punches. And that 9 months, it took a lot. It took a lot. I saw a kid really fighting ring rust in there. And Ozzy Duran, what I had said to that, you don't want him in close because that would be his punching zone. But Ozzy was having success on the outside. But I did think that one shot here and there was not enough. And I know some of you folks can say, no, you're being biased because that's your boy. I'm not. I'm looking for the fight the way it is. And I saw... Even though arm punches, a lot of you guys feel, shouldn't be counted as points, I saw a Brandon just do a little bit more. He was, you know, a little bit more fluent. He was adding a little bit more, but the commitment wasn't there. So a draw, I would have been happy with that, you know. But I'm certainly not going to argue with somebody believing they saw that Ozzy Duran win that one. And you know, I was thinking about having him on. I think we'll probably get him on for next week so we could – talk to him, and also talk to Brandon and see what they think, you know. But anyways, I still had Brandon winning that fight. Unfortunately, a lot of folks didn't see that it was his fight, But it is what it is, man.
I thought it was a draw or a Duran win. I got to be consistent, and I tried to score harder blows as more than you know. But at the same time, Duran's output didn't do a lot for me. If he's not hurting you, let your hands go, man. You know, get in there. You're obviously moving him and rocking him. When he landed shots, Brandon moved. Brandon
right.
Flat. Get in there and do something. If you know, like, if I get screwed yet again, I'm going to be an opponent in my next fight. If I beat this guy, it'll probably still be hard for me to get fights, but I'll probably be back on the network. I'll probably get a bigger fight, hopefully. Let your hands go, Rocky Juarez. You know, I mean, come on. To me, he didn't do himself any favors. He didn't make it clear. He just went, you know, he made a case for himself, but it wasn't the strongest case in the world. But, you know, I think Brandon probably learned that you can't be off this long. You
got
to be more active.
You got to be more active. But, hey, let's call a guy that was more active, and he did come, and he showed up to fight. Let's do that, you know?
How about that?
And who are we talking about here, Gabriel? Who was the guy that came and just stole the show?
Artemio the King Reyes. What a passionate performance. I thought it was just absolutely
amazing. And the thing, his storyline, too, is just something else to talk about. You know, I mean, his father in a coma, and he came out there, and he's like, he literally fought for his respect because of the fact that Molina was the high praise prospect, and he just showed that's exactly
you
what he is. You
friend.
Know, let's try him again. But he just basically showed that's what he is a prospect. You know, great win for him.
I just thought it was tremendous, and for a guy to be, you know, in that position where he's basically just brought in brought in to lose, but he was there as the opponent. The style favored the boxing style of Molina, and he just said, because I asked him, this is kind of like Jesse Vargas versus Josecito Lopez. He said, yeah, the difference is going to be that I'm going to throw a lot more punches, and boy, did he, man.
Can I please speak to Mr. Reyes?
Yeah, it is him.
How you doing, brother? This is Dave.
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
Doing good. This is I'm Dave Duenas, and I got my co-host Gable Montoya. We are on live right now and leaving in the ring.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man. We're doing good. We were talking about that sensational win and really how you really kind of put the momentum of they're appraising the prospect, and you basically showed the world that's exactly what he was, a prospect getting in with the big league. How did you feel, man? I mean, because there was some intense look in your face. It looked like there was – I wouldn't say there was concern, but the focus, man, was just cutting deep into the ring. I mean, I just saw a guy that was just in a zone. Like, to me, you just didn't hear – you didn't see or you didn't hear anything that was around you.
No, I was in a zone. I was focused. I just went out there, and I knew my game plan, and that's what I had to just keep focused on. Going out there and putting the pressure on him, you know, backing him up,
right,
making him uncomfortable inside the ring and not allowing him to really think.
Now, let me ask you this, because he was throwing, you know, he was throwing some pretty good shots. But to me, there were a lot of arm punches. Like, they didn't really look like they had nothing really behind it. Did you feel that there was some power there? And were you surprised that he had some quick hands, but the muster wasn't enough to kind of paste on you?
Right. Yeah, I didn't feel any kind of pop to his punches. A lot of arm punches he was throwing. And I would see that he would put his body into the punch, but it was nothing as profound as I would feel. Like, sometimes sparring with my sparring partners, they would hit me a little more harder than he did. But, you know, we just kept moving forward and not giving him any kind of room so that he had leverage to any shot he had.
Absolutely, Gabe.
Hey, how you doing, Demio? We did an interview
pretty
right
good.
Before
how are you,
the
Gabe?
Show. I'm doing great, man. I was moved, not to get too touchy-feely on you, by your win. I just, knowing your history, having spoken to you before the fight, and knew that, you know, a lot of fighters will tell you, hey, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and then they get in the fight and you're like, dude, why aren't you doing this or that? And yet you did everything that you told me you were going to do. You were going to throw more punches. Like you said, I compared it to Vargas versus Josecito Lopez, and you said, but the difference is my volume. Talk to me a little bit about just round by round, how you were able to just stay on game plan no matter what happened, because you got a little bit outboxed in that first round, and then you just bounced right back and got on task. Can you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. Usually in the gym or in sparring, I'm always a slow starter. I use the first round to kind of study my opponent and see what kind of punches he throws, how much speed he has, and how he's moving. So that first round, I was kind of trying to time his jab and trying to counter him while he was punching his punches. And he had a little speed on him. You know, his jab was coming off pretty quick, but it was nothing like a sticky jab to where I would feel it. It was just, he would pop me, and I was, okay, you got me. And once I was aware of his speed and once I was aware of how he was moving, second round, I came out and just started closing the gap and fought my fight.
Was there anything about him that surprised you? Or because this is the thing that kind of threw me in the second round, was that he decided to start fighting your fight and come in close. He got rid of the jab. Were you surprised that he decided to go toe-to-toe with you, or am I eyes deceiving me and you just made him do that?
To a certain extent, I would say it was kind of a mixture of the two. It surprised me that he was reluctant to stay inside with me. At the same time, I didn't allow him to really breathe, because I would see, you know, I watched the video and I would see that he would try to move on me, but I would just cut the ring off and stay in his chest, stay in, you know, in a close range, to where I didn't really allow him to move as much.
Hey, you know, even though you were cutting that ring, were you surprised in how long he was? Because them body shots, to me, they kind of made him go, man, I gotta maybe try to push him back. That's the sense that I got from him, that, you know, Molina was trying to push you back or oppose his size or his power that he thought he had to you, you know. And I had that huge sense that when you landed those body shots, that's when he decided to sit there and trade. Were you surprised that he didn't wake up from that? Like, he didn't decide to become the boxer and dance a little more?
Yeah. Like I said, to a certain extent, yeah, I was surprised that he would stay in there with me. But again, I didn't really allow him to move that much, because when he did, I still closed the gap, and I was sticking to my game plan of staying in his chest. I didn't want to really give him any kind of breathing room, because I knew him being a good boxer in his amateur pedigree, if I allowed him time to think, then, you know, he would be able to throw off his combinations from the outside, and we were just trying to minimize that to the utmost extent, you know.
Now, you know, let's talk about that pedigree, because most guys that don't have that pedigree, or they're going to get in with the guy that, you know, was going to be the Olympics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they would be intimidated. Why weren't you, though? To me, you kind of like took it like, screw it. I don't care about what he's bringing. I'm a man, and I'm bringing what I'm going to bring.
Right. Yeah, and I wasn't concerned at all. You know, what he did in the amateurs was all in the past. You know, he did good in the amateur with the big gloves and the headgear. But when it came to professionals, it's a whole different ball game. You know, we got little gloves, and the shots are more profound than the amateurs, you know, because you got headgear that takes away some of the oomph to the punch, you know. And now when you got these little gloves, I wasn't worried about him. I knew that he was going to come in and try to box me, and I was aware that he had some speed, but it was nothing I'd never seen before, so I wasn't concerned, you know. I would say that the confidence on my side was more along the lines of fearing no man. I don't fear anything. You know, I'm not scared of anybody in that ring. And, you know, I was just, you know, ready to go out there and just make him fight my fight.
Was any of the motivation added because you felt, or was this something that you just kind of drew up in your mind to have motivation, was that you were being undermined by the press, by fans, where everybody was more focused on this young man, Molina, from this high praise pedigree of amateur. What was your thought?
Yeah. To the build up to the fight, you know, he was getting praise. You know, he's a 2008 Olympian and this and that. You know, and that's fine. I don't listen to any critics or anything like that. I was just focused on my training, focused on my work.
But that had pissed you off a little bit. I mean, you're a guy that's put in the work.
Right. No, you know, I don't let it affect me mentally, you know, because once a person starts dwelling on those kind of things, it could drain them mentally. So I didn't let that, you know, be of concern to me. I knew that my work in the gym was tremendous and my preparation was insane. So I was focused and ready to go out there and give it to him, you know, from round one to round eight.
Now, you know, immediately after I watched that fight, I tweeted to Thompson. I said, these are the kind of guys we want to see fight. You know, I mean, you came out there, you had determination, heart. You kept it right in his chest. You didn't allow this guy to be flashy. And when he was flashy, you adjusted to it. Those are the type of fighters that we need to continuously have, you know, TV time. You know, fighters that are fight-friendly for the fans.
Right.
And stuff. Now, after that fight, we've seen this happen numerous times. We saw it with Dmitry Pirog, where he beat a top prospect, Jacobs, and then again, and then after that, he just basically disappeared from the scene because the networks weren't too interested in them. Were the networks with Showtime, after that fight, did they come up to you and did they talk to you about possibly getting you back on?
I think they spoke to my trainer Ruben, and they said, you know, they told him, where have you been hiding this kid? You know, he's a very, you know, he's a good fighter. You know, he's a fan friendly. But I haven't received any, you know, my manager received the phone calls and promoters, and I'm all for it, you know. I just, even at that, you know, I fought Friday, back in the gym, and Tuesday of this week, I'm back working out, working hard, you know, trying to perfect any kind of errors that I had and work on the mistakes I was making, you know. This is my job, and I got to just keep working, and, you know, when a fight comes, I'll be ready for it.
Man, I'm telling you, when that fight came, you were definitely ready for it, brother. Who else is an interest out there for you that they need to be worried about?
As far as an opponent goes?
Yeah.
You know, whoever they want to put in front of me, I'll train as hard as I ever did, like I did for this fight, you know, to give the fans, of course, a great fight and just to make it happen in there like I did against Molina.
Man, I want to see you back in there, man. Was that game?
Oh, yeah, without question. When you – I think the thing that really got me, you know, and was when you were announced the winner and you just let out this sound, this scream. And
yeah.
So much emotion and – it really blew me away, man. It was
gave
really
me
like goosebumps. I said, it was moving. And how much were you just thinking, you know, coming from that Mike Dallas fight, which I called this like a bookend. You faced Mike Dallas in your second fight, and you did well, but you lost. And then to bookend it against another high level amateur, an Olympian, no less, and to pull it out so decisively. One, were you worried that you wouldn't get the decision? And two, just talk to me about how you felt at that moment.
After the fight, I went to my corner. I was like, we got it, right? We got it. You know, because I felt that my pressure and my activity was the deciding factor in that fight.
Right.
And once they announced my name, it was just the emotion, the excitement that I felt inside of me to be classified as a person that beat this Olympian kid who had so much praise, you know. And pretty much you can say in a sense that I exposed him. You know, he wasn't all that he was made out to be.
Right.
You know, I made him uncomfortable in the ring, and then just that joy and excitement. You can even see my trainer, Ruben. He was kind of teary-eyed from the excitement and joy that we came out with the victory in that fight.
It was just unbelievable, man. And just congratulations. I mean, just such a – I know, you know, it's like you didn't win a world title or, you know, it wasn't, you know, that kind of fight. But in a way, you did win something huge, you know, because – if you had lost, you know, you have a style that's very difficult. You're big for the weight. Even in winning, I'm not surprised your phone isn't ringing off the hook, you know. You look, and I don't mean to put you in light with a guy with a shady past, but actually Ernie, who's going to be giving us a call from our used to be on our show as a co-host, a good friend, Ernie Gabillon from Everlast, said you looked like a mini Margarito in a sense, you know. He called you Margarita. Because just that style, it's very big, and you just didn't take no for an answer.
No, you didn't, man.
In a couple months where we've seen some pretty passionless fights or some mismatches, it was nice to see a guy that was an underdog that fought with nothing but passion, emotion, technical skill, and just had to have it that night, man. I just, in the sense of a fight fan and a writer, I just wanted to say thank you. Those are the reasons that I do
that.
Thank
you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, brother, you stole the show, man. And hey, whenever you want to come back on Leaving the Ring, hey, no problem. Don't even have to nap. Just call in, man. Hey, thanks again.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, and about the respect, trust me, you earned it, you won it, and you took over. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, brother. You have a good one, man, and keep us updated.
Oh, sounds good, man. You guys have a good one, too. Thank you for giving me the time to be on with you guys.
No problem.
Hey, our pleasure. Take care, man. All right.
Yeah, you know, that scream he did right after the announcement of his victory was something else. You know, you just felt everything, what this kid was going through, and being undermined, et cetera, and you just you couldn't help but just go like, good, finally a good decision. We finally got a good decision, and the politics didn't ruin our night to start it off, okay? Hey.
That's the thing. That would have killed me, dude. See, you know, not that, you know, I'm like, you know, hugging up on the guy or anything, but if he would have gotten robbed, I think I would have thrown my laptop. You know, it was just like,
yeah,
just enough. You know, the headphones come off, and I'm just like, peace, you know? But it was nice to see justice done, and also just that kind of passion, man, you know?
Absolutely.
David Chen, Ernie is on hold. He's there waiting. He's actually going to call in and give us an actual Margarito update, not Margareas.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk about Casitas and Burns and Groves and Smith, and we're going to talk about Butte and Johnson. You know, I'm always told 3 hours is just not enough for leaving the ring, guys. You got to make it a little longer. If we could, we would. But it's funny because we feel the same way a lot of times. We always sit there and go, man, it went by too fast. I think we didn't have a chance to talk about this fight because we didn't talk about Reyes and Molina fight at all last week. We kind of slipped away from us, and that was a great matchup. I thought it was a great fight for both of these guys, you know. So we're going to make sure that we make our quick picks about our Saturday night fights that are happening this weekend. And while David Chen is finding where Ernie's at, there he is. Ernie, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving in the ring.
Oh, just getting ready, having my Ariza shake so I can go work out.
Oh, man.
Should I do my Conte cocktail?
Your Conte cocktail, yeah. Oh,
you're
man.
Double missing it tonight.
Hey, make
awesome.
Sure you... Make sure you have your two doses of tiger blood, too, while you're at it from Charlie C.
What's going on, family?
Oh, man, doing good. And listeners, if you haven't, Ernie is the host of the Boxing Lab and also one of the representatives of Everlast. He's a great, great guy. Overall, guys, tremendous show, great show. If you guys haven't had a chance to tune into the Boxing Lab, it's really good. I always miss it live. And then the time I have found it live, I've called in, and I just don't get patched in for some reason.
It's tough, man. We get so many guests on. We've got the lashback and the good vibes from you guys to where, you know, a lot of the fighters now come on and say, hey, I need to be on your show. And I'm like, okay, well, hey, and since we're so new to it,
right.
You know, which we get on everybody. And before I go into Margarito, I just want to say, guys like Reyes and DeMarco really show why
exactly.
We are fans of the sport, man.
Exactly.
Seriously.
You know.
It's just, you know, and I have to disagree. I didn't think it was an early stoppage, you know, and I thought his body language said stop it, you know.
Not his body language, his face
yeah.
Said stop it, you know. It was pretty bad, pretty bad.
There's a slump shoulder look that you look for a fighter, and if he's got that slump shoulder, then you know that, you know, that he tried his best and it's kind of, you know, maybe a broken spirit, and I think that might have happened with Linares a little bit.
Yeah.
You wanted me to come on and talk about Camp Margarito, huh?
Yep. Let's hear it, man. What's going on over there in Camp Margarito in Mexico? I know Brandon Rios is out there and a few other guys.
Yeah, for those who don't know, normally Tony comes up to California to train. When he was with Crapatito, he would be in South El Monte under Ben Lira's gym. And since he switched over to Robert Garcia, he had been in Oxnard for two fights. He thought he'd change it up, so he wanted to get into some high-altitude training, so he trained in the famous Otani Mountain, where guys like Morales and I think Marquez has been up there for training. But it's a world-famous gym. I'm sure if people have seen pictures of previous open workouts up there, you'll recognize the gym. Well, he brought everybody out there. The last one to get out there was Brandon. He was kind of hesitating because not necessarily because he didn't want to go, but more so because his conditioning coach, he's now got a conditioning coach, Henry Castro of KO Gym. He was unsure as to whether Henry would go, and Henry's a big integral part of what, you know, Brandon's about now. You know, whereas before, he would just boil down to 135. Now he's trying to do it the right way, and you know, Henry's been a big part of that. So once Henry committed to go up there, it was just gravy for Brandon. So now so Tony, Brandon Rios, there's an all-star list out there. Brandon Rios, Jose, Jesus Soto Carras is up there. Of course, sparring partners, we got Sebastian Lujan. We got Omar Henry, who's, you know, the self-taughted and Cotto clone, and, you know, his name's been out there. Remember when he was rumored to have been sparring with Manny Pacquiao, and he refused it. And then this kid from DiBella, who I've been high on for a long time, and was a good look, and I know we needed the speed and the size, is this kid, Jay Leon Love, 9-0, 6 knockouts out of DiBella's gym in Detroit, Michigan. So they're all up there. Jose Luis Carras is up there. So it's been a fantastic camp. This is one of those things where once you become isolated, you have nothing to do but to focus on what, you know, the task at hand. And from all accounts, everybody is doing well up there. They're running in the mornings. They're running up in the hills. The high altitude is getting them really prepped and increasing, I guess, their blood count cells so that way they can intake more and the fatigues become less and less. And specifically to Margarito, he went into this camp already ripped. And I don't know if you guys have saw the pictures, because usually what he does is he shakes out in Tijuana before he moves up to California. Well, he kind of did the same thing, but he really, really just amped it up. And when he got to the Otavi Mountains, he was already ripped and ready to go.
Now, is he hanging out with Memo out there?
Huh?
Is he hanging out with Memo out there? Is that why he's so ripped now?
Hey, but you know, when you say shakes out, do you mean Ariza shakes out? Or
he blends up a cocktail of special herbs and the Morales Multa mix, and, you know. But, yeah, he's been up there.
Enjoy boy compo stew.
Well, he's been up there since the weekend of the Dawson-Bradley fight. He's been up there since, I think, October. That means Dawson-Hopkins fight. So I think he's been up there since the second week of October. And then Robert and Brandon followed suit right after the Nonito fight. They flew out literally that Sunday. In fact, Robert had to go all the way back to Oxnard to pack and then go straight back to Mexico. So he's been a world traveler lately. But like I said, from everything, from all accounts, sparring's been great. You know, he's got the rough and tugged, rugged guys like Soto Carras and Lujan. And my job, you know, because a lot of you know that I work for Team Margarito, specifically to Tony's co-manager, Sergio Diaz. You know, my job is to get sparring out here, some U.S. guys, someone to give them different looks. And so we tapped Jay Leon Love, who's from what I understand, and then everybody who's come back has told me that he's giving them the best looks. He's giving them the most work. He's just sitting there grinding away. He's befriended a lot of people up there. He's doing wonders up there, and everybody's just, like, taking him in. I guess up in the mountains, you don't see too many black folks, and Jay Leon is, you know, he's a black man. He's an African-American man out of Detroit. So when he goes around town, they all look at him and marvel. And me and my boy, Alex, who went up there with his best friend, Sergio, we were kidding that, yeah, they probably think he's like Kobe or Devin Alexander's was the one name that we brought up because he kind of resembles him a little bit. So they're sitting there looking at him, marveled at him, taking pictures of him. And I don't know if you guys are out on Twitter. His Twitter name is 2012 Jayla. And he has pictures of the camp up there. So if you guys want to check it out, check out his Twitter name, follow him. And he gives updates more frequently than guys like Brandon and stuff. But Omar's in there. Initially, he was a little bit out of shape, but he's rounded himself into shape. And from what I understand, he's giving him some solid work out there. I know that there had been some grumblings as to how can a Puerto Rican, you know, go up to a camp of a villainous Mexican such as Margarito. And you know what? A lot of these people don't understand this is business. I mean, it's the same thing that drove Marco Antonio Rubio to Cotto's camp. You know, it's just a business, and it's something that they have to do, and it's good looks for Omar, who's going to fight December 3rd on the Don King card out here in Anaheim. So if he needed the work, he got an opportunity where he could come in and capitalize on getting some solid work with world-class fighters, and he took the chance, and, you know, I don't think anybody should fault him for that.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Work is work, man. You know, I mean, I work with Dave.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody knows how pleasant it is to work with me.
Lord knows. They should certainly help me, Dave.
So Brandon's up there too. He's been doing solid work from what I understand. He's a beast up there. He's beasting the hell out of the opponents out there. I guess he got into sparring with oh, what's the kid's name? There's another little kid, 4-0, 3 knockouts. I think it's Jose or Juanito Lewis. They call him Little Juanito. And he ripped him apart. He just, from what I understand, Brandon's looking rather beastly up there, and he's taking this, you know, he's taking this fight serious, just like he takes everything else. But now that he's got a full-time conditioning coach under him at all times, and someone who's kind of watching what he eats, you know, he's finally getting into that athletic shape. You know, before he always been in boxing shape, but now he's getting into that athletic shape to where he can go longer, harder, faster. Pause. And he's doing great. He's doing fantastic. I actually got a pretty funny story from the camp up there. Alex, the guy who went up there with Sergio Diaz, told me that they're running up in the hills, and, you know, it's real thin atmosphere, so it's really hard to take in a breath.
Right.
So everybody's jogging, and everybody's, you know, Tony's in great shape, so he's doing that up there, you know, Brandon, everybody's running up there. And, you know, Alex does about a mile, says, you know, it's enough, so he starts walking back. He comes across this big old pile of crap. And he's looking at it, and him and Jay Leon comes down the hill. Jay Leon looks, and they're all looking at it going, dude, that's human poop. And they're all looking at it, no, that can't be human poop. Well, who would poop in the middle of the road? So they're all looking at it and stuff, and said, no, dude, that's human. That's too big for anything else. So, you know, after a couple, you know, minutes of that conversation, they walk on down. And so they asked, and said, who took a dump? And no one wanted to raise their hands, and finally Jose Luis Carras finally raised his hands and admitted. He said, I couldn't take another step. I said, the atmosphere got to me, and all of a sudden my stomach just started wanting to explode. So I dropped my pants, and I just went right there. And so Alex had the nerve to go, okay, so what did you wipe your ass with? And he said, do you see these little pebbles? And he goes, no. And he said, yeah, I had to wipe my butt with these little pebbles. It's like, oh,
wow.
That's, so if that's
I guess
not enough,
you gotta go.
Yeah. But here's the kicker. If that's not enough, right? They go back to the hotel, and the hotel is so brand, it's brand new. It's literally being made as they're in there. They're, in fact, the boxers are the only ones in the hotel right now, simply because it's not ready. There's no running water. So there's no way for him to kind of clean off or anything like that. So he's literally, you know, just took a fresh dump out in the hills, come back out, and they immediately have to go back into the gym to start working.
Oh my God.
He happens to wrap Jay Leon Love's hand, and Jay Leon's like sitting there like, turning his face because the smell's so bad.
That's brutal.
There's other stories. I can't tell. I shouldn't tell. Stays in the old Towny Mountains.
Hey, if anybody gets upset at this, all you got to say, Ernie, is like, I had a little bit too much of the tiger blood.
I will say this. Wow. You know, I said it's reminiscent of a frat house, but it's very focused. My friend, again, Alex, he said he brought in a Diet Coke, and they all looked at him like they were going to kill him. And so, you know, they're taking this very serious, and, you know, it's up there in the mountains where it's very isolated, so the focus is 100% there. And there's been rumors that they might come back a little early. They're talking about maybe the third week of November, but I'm not 100% sure. You know, if they do, I know Jay Leon's told me that Tony's invited him back to TJ to finish up his sparring, so they might move off the mountains fairly soon, and if so, we'll try to get him on both our radio shows if you'd like.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but everybody's up there very happy, very focused, and it's, from what I understand, from all accounts, this has been one of the best camps that they've seen overall.
Man, that's, can't wait. Ernie, thank you again, brother, for calling in giving us this update, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, you guys. And, you know, like I said, it's always been one big family, and whatever I can do to help you, you guys know I'll do it.
And listeners and fight fans, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 6 p.m. To the Boxing Lab. Okay? It's a great show. Ernesto Gabillon.
Great thought of that name, by the way.
Yeah. I told him, I was like, yo, why not just name it the Boxing Lab? I even did the intro, man. I was like, that's the name that I was thinking of using first, but I was like, I'm going to hold on to it until somebody is worthy of using it, and you came along.
I'm not worthy.
you make shakes and cocktails in that Boxing Lab?
Oh, yeah, man. Rats love it.
I know. You got to put Victor Conte and Alex Ariza under that banner too. The Boxing Lab and Memo.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we had a show one time. I think we're gonna do it again. Where when we had two guys on at the same time when Worlds Collide. How about Conte and Ariza getting at it? Can you imagine?
Well, I think
I kind of kept wanting to ask that.
Yeah.
You know, like May 5th, 2012, when Floyd comes back. You guys on the undercard, or what's going on?
Oh man, I would say though that Alex would win the verbal war between the both of them because Alex is just he's a little bit more freely of dropping things, where Conte's a little bit more political.
Yeah,
you know
he's
I mean?
A little bit more reserved in his comments, whereas Alex just kind of flies off the cuff.
Just call them the dope man. Dope man. All right, Ernie.
Pretty straight up.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thanks again, brother.
Oh, anytime, you guys. And great show, as always.
Hey, appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Let's Ernesto Gavion from the Boxing Lab calling in, giving us the update of Antonio Margarito in Mexico and the sparring partners and a little bit of shit at the same time. Little rumors of the crap on the floor because somebody couldn't hold it in. Anyway, man, let's
brutal.
Talk. Yeah, I know. That's just how do you explain that to everybody at the gym? Hey, you smell like shit, eh? Oh, you don't understand. I couldn't hold it no more. There was no leaves to clean me.
That is one of the most grim stories I've ever heard.
I know. No. Lucian Bute, Glenn Johnson, who you got there, Gabe? Break it down for us, brother.
Oof. We got 15 minutes. You want me to go through the fight schedule and we'll just make our picks as we go?
Sure, why not? Go for it.
Yeah, we'll go as fast as I can. That way we don't run out of time. November 4th, Friday night, at the Fantasy Springs Casino, Indio, California. Fight everybody's been dying to see. Antela Pitura, Sergio Mora, 22-2-2, versus Jose Flores, 45-11. On the undercard, it's actually really nice for a young prospect I've been following. I think you have as well. Hugo Centeno, 9-0, versus Alan Sanchez, 8-2-1. I'm taking the favorites in this one, Sergio Mora, as well as Hugo Centeno.
Yeah, I got that same thing. Yeah, same pick.
At the Kudinka Ice Palace in Moscow, Russia, Denis Lebedev, 22-1, versus James the Michelin Man Tony, 73-6-3, for the cruiserweight. It's just cruiserweights fighting. Underneath that is Ismael Silak versus Chris Henry, 16-0 versus 25-2. I'm going Chris Henry, although I haven't really seen a lot of Salak. I think Henry's better than he's been lately. Although, you know, I'm probably crazy. That's my upset special for the weekend. I'm also going Denis Lebedev by late stoppage.
I don't know. I'm going to pass on that one. What's the next one?
That is hilarious. I think everybody's passing on that one.
Yeah.
November 5th, this is what we've all been waiting for. The Pepsi Coliseum in Quebec, Canada, on Showtime, Lucian Bute, 29-0, versus Glenn Johnson, 51-15-2. And Steve Molitor and Sebastian Gauthier, 33-2 versus 21-2. I'm going to pass on that fight, but I'm going to go to the Bute fight and take Bute by decision. I think Glenn is on the other side of the hill. He might have a small camp built at the bottom of it. I don't think he's completely done, but I think Bute is younger, faster, stronger. He's familiar with Glenn's style, and I think he has more ways to win.
You know, the thing about this fight here is I'm not going to say he's over the hill yet, because I'm for sure that Glenn Johnson has kind of proven that he's still very competitive and he can make up a good fight. We saw that with Frotch. We saw that with Green. But the difference here is that the speed and youth is really going to be the major factor with Bute. But not just that, the body shots. Bute's body shot power punches have made a big difference. With lesser opponents, I don't think he's going to be able to knock out Glenn Johnson and overwhelm him with the hand speed like he's done to other guys that have been put in front of him,
sure.
Ute. But I think them body shots are going to take out what's ever left of Johnson. The reason is because you have a guy that's an older gentleman, and he's kind of fluctuated in his weight. He's from 168 to a light heavyweight. He's came back and forth, you know. And to me, that just puts a lot of miles to your body. And I think with Ute, if he sticks with a plan of going to the body, that he's going to end up bringing up those miles a little earlier in the fight than it would later in the fight. But you got a guy, too, Johnson, who's highly intelligent, a guy that really knows the science and is really underrated by a lot of people because he doesn't have that flashiness. He doesn't have that special effect about his boxing style. But he's an intelligent guy. He can make adjustments. He's a guy that knows what he's good at, and he knows how to use it. So this, to me, is a true test for Lucian Ute. We're going to find out if this bubble really does have some real hot air or just helium in it, if it's going to pop. I really expect Lucian Ute, that a lot of folks have been saying he's the pound-for-pound fighter at 168. We're going to probably see a mimic of Sergio Martinez against Darren Barker. We're going to see a very subpar Lucian Ute, in my opinion. I think Johnson is going to bring out the worst out of him, and Ute is going to have to dig deep. Not with just with body shots, but preferably with ring smarts. So I'll go with Ute in late rounds decision as well, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're spot on. I think he's very good at the body shots, and I think, you know, a guy with older legs like Glenn has, it's going to go that way. It's going to slow him down. At the Centro de Cancun, in Cancun, Mexico, HBO, Boxing After Dark, this is what it's all about, folks.
Yep.
Alfredo Angulo, 20-1, versus James Kirkland, 29-1. Both these men have very high knockout percentages, I think 80% for Angulo, 87% for Kirkland. Underneath that in support is Peter Quillen versus Craig McEwen, 25-0 versus 19-1. I'm taking Quillen in that fight. I think the style is not right for if Andy Lee can outbox you and outpunch you. I think that Peter Quillen, with his athleticism and all the tools that he brings to bear along with his power, is going to take Craig McEwen. We're going to find out if the power is real and if he can stop McEwen. I'm not sure if he can. We'll see. McEwen is coming off a knockout loss. But I fully expect Peter Quillen to win this fight. I'll wait a second for the other fight.
You know, Peter Quillen, I like what I saw, what I've seen of the kid. Okay, but at the same time, what I've heard from the kid, I don't like. To me, it leaves a lot of questions. So early in the game, when you have not battle tested yourself, when you're sitting there and you're really honestly not saying he's handpicking, but he's making suggestions about opponents being put in front of him. Kind of leaves me a question of why is he questioning himself? What is it about himself that he doesn't believe in? That's the huge question. With now going in with a guy that had a real back and forth war with Andy Lee, there's no question about what he's going to bring to the table. He's going to bring drive. He's going to bring will, and he's not going to stop. To me, that's what we're going to find out. Exactly what Peter has, and exactly what is Peter going to do with a guy that's not going to fold, that's not over the hill, and really is going to come to fight. Two things. He either stops him early, and then we all can sit back and say, well, he fought a guy that pretty much left what was left of him in his last fight. Or he's in a tough grit fight where we sit there and go, oh, okay, now we're closer in believing his own hype. So I go with Peter Quillen. I think that may get a little closer in the believing that hype that he believes in. You there, Gabe? Or did you fall? No, there you are.
Okay.
Hello?
let's prolong it just a little longer. We'll get back to Angulo Kirkland. At the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida, Guillermo Jones, 37-3-2, versus Michael Maroney, 20-3. I'm going Guillermo Bernie Mac Jones by decision. I'll keep moving. At the Domo de la Fiera in León, Mexico, Chris Arreola, 33-2, versus Alonzo Butler, 28-3. 2-1. I'm going Areola on that. I think that's,
yeah, me too.
It is what it is. At the Wembley Arena in London, England, George Groves takes on Paul Smith. I'm going George Groves on this one. And
Mickey
Burns versus Michael Katsidis. That's a hell of a fight.
That's
going to
be a great fight.
Radar.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I'm going to flip a coin, and heads is Burns.
How many times can Katsidis, though, come out and be aggressive without, you know, skipping a beat and his face hold up? That's my question. You know, I think Ricky Burns is getting them at the right time and in the right point of his career at this moment. I'm picking Ricky Burns to take this one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Burns. I think, you know, cuts and just the wear and tear on Katsidis, I think it's going to be Burns. Although, you know, he is there to be hit. He is boxing smarter right now, but I just think he's a little fresher than Michael Katsidis, and he's also on his home turf. Getting back to the fight that we have not picked, you know, I'm going to go with my heart on this one, Dave, and I'm going to be no bones about it. You got to go to the party. With, you know, you
hold on.
With...
The drum roll.
Yeah. I got to roll with who I came to the party with. I'm going James Kirkland. I don't know how he's going to do it. I think the fight's going to end suddenly, but I think he has the ability to box. He even said on a chat recently that he's probably going to box a little bit more, which we'll see if he's able to do that. But he's got quickness, he's got speed, he's got power. I'm going with James Kirkland. I don't know how, but I'm going to roll with who I came to the party with. And I'm sorry, Angulo. I got a lot of love for you, buddy. It's nothing personal. I just kind of got a feeling about this one, the way he's focused that James has shown. How quiet he's been during training camp, all the things that I mentioned earlier, fighting with two people at the same time. I just have a feeling.
Yep, got that feeling there, huh? Well, you know what? I go back again. I think this is a very interesting fight. It's people I know already kind of writing off Kirkland because of what they've seen when he got in with Noshida. But I think that if you have to go back and look at that fight and don't fall into that hype, you know, about those knockdowns. You look at him, his eyes were in glaze. He did not look hurt. When Joe Cortez stepped over him, he was fighting to get back up. That gave me the sense that this guy was not hurt. There was more something else physically wrong with him, and those were his legs. He had no legs stepping into that fight. So what happens between both of these guys, I believe it's going to be explosion. What's my prediction? Pain, baby. Lots of pain in that fight. It's going to be one of those fights where you're just sitting there going, how do these guys do? You know, when you sit there and you go, I could be a fighter. I think I could be a fighter. When you see these two guys throw punches and eat right hands and left hooks and whatever's going to be thrown that night, you're going to sit there and go, no, I can't be a fighter. I just can't do it, you know. That's the thing about this one here. Who lands the first punch? The person that lands that first big punch within that 10-second, you know, after the ring is going to be the dictator of the fight. I say that's the guy that's going to have more of a chance of winning the fight because he's going to set the pace of ring generalship, which is move forward. The other guy is going to have to adjust. He's going to have to adjust what's happening to him in front of him. So I say this, and this is going to be my pick, okay? I'm going with Angulo. I don't think he's going to blow out Kirkland, though. I think, honestly, you're going to see a hell of a fight. I think we're going to see what Angulo is made out of because we have seen Kirkland get dropped. But I'm really interested in seeing how Angulo gets dropped, hurt, and gets back up. As much as I'm very curious of seeing Kirkland get dropped this time, though, not flash knockdowns and not a referee standing over him when he's trying to get back up. But this time, seeing Mandingo eat canvas. I like Mandingo. He's a great guy. These are two guys that we've spoken to, two guys that, you know, we have kind of made a relationship with through the radio show and outside the radio show. We cover their fights. We've met them. But one of them has got to go. And I think that I think it's going to be Angulo that's going to be the guy with the hand risen with a KO over Mandingo on a great, great HBO After Dark fight. This is going to be where we all go back and go, this is what HBO used to be about before. Thank you,
yeah.
Rob Greenberg, for leaving.
Yeah,
you know,
I really think it's going to be one to remember, and you know, my hope for both guys is that it is the kind of fight where both guys come out and change some of the opinions about them, that their stock rises because they're taking a big chance and facing each other. They're doing what most fighters won't do, and risking what they have. They could have stayed padding it for a little while, made some money, and instead they're risking it all. And it really is a must-win for both guys. Angulo, the only way he can stay relevant is by winning in Mexico and until he gets his visa. And for James, the only way to get redemption is to face a big puncher like Angulo and beat him and walk through fire doing it. I like James's body work. I think he's stopped by Dennis Sharp off of that. I know it's Dennis Sharp, but when you look across the resumes of people on the card, Peter Quillin took a lot longer to get him out of there than James did, and he didn't have any trouble doing it.
Right.
James has stopped people on body shots before, even when he's been wobbled, like against Barrio. That's, to me, is going to be his bread and butter. And you can say, you know, he's going to need to get past the jab and the right hand of Angulo. But if there's anybody that can force an inside fight and fight very well on the inside, it is James Kirkland. Angulo also throws very nice inside shots. He does kind of tend to favor the mid
to
long
range. He needs that
distance,
though, for that right hand, though. And that's the thing that I think that's going to be Kirkland's problem, is avoiding that right hand, because Angulo is good with leading with the right hand, and I think that's going to be the difference in the fight. I mean,
if you know that that's your opponent's weapon, though, maybe, you know, and granted, James eats right hands like I smoke cigarettes, but still, at the same time, if you know that's the one weapon you really got to worry about, you can game plan for that, and I think that they have, whereas I don't really think of Angulo's left hook all that much, although he does so. You know, he does throw it to the body, but he kind of favors the right hand to the body. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets to the body first, what the pace is going to be like early, and who's able to handle it. So,
absolutely.
Like I said, I'm going purely off of heart, and just kind of saying I'm rolling with who I came with. And Gulo, as much as, you know, I dig the guy, it's just kind of one of those things. I mean, it's. I like everybody involved. I love Nacho. I really like Ann Wolf. I like both fighters. It's not an easy pick for me to make, but like I said, I'm going Kirkland on that point.
Well, there you go. Gabriel Montoya is going Kirkland. I'm going Angulo. We're going to find out Saturday night. All right, man, we're at the end of our show. Thank you, everybody, that's tuned in on Leaving the Ring. It's always our pleasure to speak to the listeners, the fans of boxing, the boxing heads out there in the world that make a big difference for our sport. Again, please pick up your magazine, your digital magazine, online magazine, Undisputed Magazine, Fight Magazine, for only $1.99. And for a whole year, $9.99. You can't miss it. We got some great stories. Like I said, pick it up because you're going to want to read about that Marine that did pass away in the ring because of some negligent people that didn't know what they were doing, helping out fighters, okay? Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas, my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We're signing off. You guys have a good night.
Peace.